Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio, Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and baby, Jesus! Help us!
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Abbott, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah! Yakuza Kick Radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to come on Thursday night in
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
This is Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope one of that cowboy, guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that doctor, homie. Fuck that. Black me.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker.
Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J-Cat Morris.
You are now listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
Hey, it's Yakuza Kick Radio. Welcome to the show. It is Thursday, June 7th, 2012. Should have a pretty entertaining show, for better or worse, for you guys. All right. For starters, I'm preoccupied all fucking show for the fact that my Miami Heat have their backs up against the walls right now. And, you know, they're down 3-2 in this series against the Celtics, so I'm watching this shit muted, and I'm doing the show. A couple things I want to get into tonight. First off, I'm going to get into the PWS show that I attended on Friday. I have some good, some negative, some of that stuff to get into. I've been offered by the owner to pretty much speak my opinion on it and have him respond to it, which, you know, I'm feeling, pretty flattered by, because honestly, you know, every wrestling fan that goes to a show doesn't have some negative things to say and have the owner go, hey, well, you know, let me address you personally. So, I mean, again, you know, I've always respected Eric Tapout for, you know, what he's done. He came on the show, gave me a great interview the first time. Really don't have anything but respect for the guy, but, you know, I don't know, man. I do have some negative things to say. I mean, he takes it how he takes it. And, you know, it is what it is. I very much thank him for coming on. I will put him on in 1 second. Also, I have Nick Burke on later on. So, I'm going to put this guy on right now. And, Eric, you there?
Hey, what's going on, my friend? How are you?
Hey, good. I got another number here, but it's all ones. I don't know if it's like a blocked number. I guess
yeah,
I'll put it on.
Yeah, off the Skype. Go ahead. It's Pat Buck calling.
Okay. Hey, you're on the air. What's going on?
Hello.
Hi, this is...
Radio show sounds organized.
You talking to me?
This is Eric Tappan over here. We got Pat Buck calling in, and we have a radio host that is saying okay. All right, let's move on. What do we got, Jake at Morris? Break it down for us.
Okay, man. Right. Yeah, I wanted to get into the PWS show that I attended on Friday. Like I said, there's, you know, some definite positives, but I did want to get into some negatives. And, you know, Eric offered me the opportunity to actually, you know, say these things and have them address those. So we'll do so. First things first, I regret not one bit going to the show. I'll put that out there. The Great Muta was there as advertised, and, you know, it's I saw him when Ring of Honor did their final battle and brought in Great Muta, and haven't been able to see him, you know, live since. So it was great to be able to see him and, you know, get the autograph and the whole nine. Upon arriving.
Wait, just, can I just cut you off real quick? Just
sure.
So, I mean, everyone's on the same page here. You had posted on a social media network that you were going to discuss an epic rant regarding the drastic fail of Pro Wrestling Syndicate's ability to perform on June 1st. In your opening statement, you just said, "I do not regret going." Please continue.
Right. But I'm,
absolutely,
you know, I'm going to tell you my positives and my negatives. I mean, if you're not able to listen to those things, and that's, you know,
well,
I mean, that's your business.
But I'm just making sure I'm following exactly what's going on.
Yeah, Eric,
okay.
Shut up.
Yeah. So either way, so, you know, as entering and, you know, the autograph thing, and I'm also trying to be polite about it, so, you know, I mean, you can take that for what it is. So, you know, it was advertised that the Great Muta was going to be in ring entrance gear, so, of course, the first thing I noticed is this was not the case.
Yep.
I know, Eric, you know, you told me why and all of that stuff, but I'm going to pretend as if I have never, you know, discussed any of this with you and allow you to address that.
Pat, you want to field this one?
Is my voice being heard? I don't know if this thing's hooked up right.
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, I'm on Skype. I want to see if this works. Yeah, I'll tell you exactly what happened. You know, with certain performers or certain wrestlers, going through and booking Great Muta was a huge risk, and it wasn't exactly the easiest thing where we go, hey, let's contact Muta and bring him aboard and go, hey, can we book you for a signing? There was a lot that went into that, especially for me hopping on board. This is my official fourth show with PWS, and I think if anybody, you know, with the exception, like I said, he hasn't been around a whole while. He's not exactly the easiest guy to get to. Mind you, English isn't his first language. Mind you, in Japan, you know, it's safe to say he's almost wrestling royalty, if not royalty, period. So what happened here is we didn't go through Great Muta to, you know, it wasn't a very easy case scenario. We were working on this for months. Now, when we contact the All Japan office, initially there's only one or two people that are very, very fluent in English. And even so then, it's kind of a broken scenario where it's still not completely easily understandable. So the emails going back and forth were pretty specific, but I think on both ends it was hard to relay information, especially with a variety of things. When it came down to the initial signing, believe me, we went above our power to tell, you know, All Japan office, Muda's translator, it was very respectful, awesome dude named Bomber, he's one of the referees. We wanted a 2-hour signing with the Great Muta, which is very different from Kijimuto, character that fans really wanted to see him and come over. It got lost in translation, and it, for myself, you know, I was with Muta when he arrived here in the States, made sure everything went smoothly. You know, our translator wasn't there from the bat, which is Taka Suzuki, a worker out of Massachusetts. So when I dealt with that and the signing came around, you know, I said, hey, you know, Muta-san, want you to know the American fans looking forward to having you, and we want to know, you know, they expected to have you in, you know, Great Muta persona. When that issue was brought up, I'll take it upon myself, that's kind of at fault for us, and at the same time, you know, deserve a little leeway, because what the feedback I got was, this really has never, and it was hard to get back the exact answer, but having something of the sort is almost similar to asking, you know, I use this analogy, having the Undertaker in full persona sign an autograph, where it's like a different realm. It's almost
right.
A little bit too withheld, where it's very protected. Where Kijimuto is more of a character that is there in present day. And I even so much say, like, well, would it be okay, Muda-san, to just, you know, go with the mask or go with the face paint? Even that was very protected. So I had to go with the choice of, do I, you know, address and say, you know, the signing's off, or argue with wrestling royalty, a person who had great faith with us that came over, or do I have to leave that is? And I made that difficult choice, and there were fans online who addressed to me and said, hey, I thought this was what it was, and even one person who said, hey, I've met Kijimuto before, and I did my best to, I pulled him aside, I said, hey, you know, I understand the situation, I completely get that, here, told him exactly the same information, I said, hey, you know, if I can do you a favor, here's a free autograph, here's a free picture. 95% of the people were very, very happy with that, and I understand how that could be, you know, a big deal, but at that point, it was really something on me where I just couldn't, you know, it's rock and hard place, couldn't win that battle where 95% of people were happy, but the real, real, real hardcore fans came to me, and I tried to make the best by them, so I can honestly say that I didn't avoid that element. There was really, you know, that is our fault, so...
No, it's not a problem.
Real quick, when I spoke to Bomber, the Japanese contact from All Japan that Pat just mentioned, after the fact, I asked him about it. What he said was there was a translation thing with when we said in ring gear. He didn't understand that that meant in full gimmick. When he got the expression in ring gear, he thought we were actually doing the Muda signing in the ring. That was kind of the language barrier there, that the phrase ring gear just wasn't specified well enough for them to get what we were going for.
Okay. No, I do understand, you know, loss in translation and that type of stuff. It things like that do happen. And it, to me, like I said, it was awesome to meet, you know, whether it was Keiji Muto, you know, or the Great Muta, either way, it didn't ruin the experience for me whatsoever. There's nothing that, you know, like I get it, I would do it again. But, of course, you know, that's one of the things that not only me, other people have addressed. So, you know, again, just given the opportunity to explain it. So then I go from that. Guess we go to the start of the show. Obviously, I understand the reasons of, you know, the dark match being the Briscoes versus Davey Richards and Adam Cole. Ring of Honor contracts, they don't allow other people to wrestle on iPay-per-views. So, again, I wasn't like, oh, my God, why are they dark matching this? But in the same token, the high caliber of match that you put on as a dark match, you're kind of setting your bar pretty high to do the rest of your show. And some of that stuff didn't come close to the bar that I think you set on the initial part of the show. So, I mean, you could respond to that. I know, Eric, you know, you went back and forth with me on IM and said that.
I thought Alex Reynolds and Aaron Fox were phenomenal. I thought they worked their asses off, personally.
Well,
which was the match immediately following the Briscoes and Davey and Cole.
May I interject?
Wasn't sure.
Okay. Sure. One thing, with all due respect, it's really hard in professional wrestling to, for you yourself, to even know the fact that you know the difference between the Great Muda and Kijimuto. I'm willing to bet, maybe not so for that crowd, but for a majority of our audience, good is not objective, it's subjective. And there are people walking away from the show. You know, everyone has their flavor of tea. Now, Ring of Honor guys are known entirely for how athletic, fast-paced, hard-hitting, how quality they are in the ring, how great they are in the ring. Now, with those circumstances, having booked those talents, you know, you got to really, if you put yourself in our position, we could have been at liberty to say, hey, and I dealt with Jim Cornette. He was very, very, very cool. He's a friend of mine, so it was delirious. Do I take these people completely off the card because I really can't have them on iPay-per-view, or do I give it more as a treat for, hey, go guys, you know, I want you guys to, you know, I want the fans in Rahway to be happy. I don't want to offend Ring of Honor. I changed the matches around, so that, you know, Eric changed the matches around to fit the needs of what our people were going to see. Putting them on first, you know, is setting the bar rather high, but you know, there really isn't, I mean, to take away from what I thought was a very good success, the iPay-per-view, that it's, there was no other really place to put them, you know, there was really no other spot for them to do, so, you know, we were stuck in a rock and a hard place, having such a hard hitting, but going back to that, Just because that's your interpretation of what good is, I mean, there are fans that think, you know, they may think their favorite match of the night was a guy named Starman. They might think the girls were the best. They might think Vader was the hot deal. Well, you say that.
Yeah.
That's not how necessarily all fans think, you know. But as far as
is unique. I mean, we don't have a niche audience. You're getting all kinds of fans from all sides of the spectrum. So it's a wide array of an opinion of good, bad, you know.
Right.
And we do so to attract. I mean, I don't try to be to book a program or book a card or an Eric 2 strictly to be that. In my personal opinion, Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate, Evolve, they hit that niche. They hit that thing. That's what they do. They deliver a quality in-ring, mind-blowing wrestling. I like the flavor of that, but I believe that our product is a mix of new guys, nostalgia, hard-hitting action, wrestle crap, females, anything and everything, you know, eventually midgets, any sort of thing. So, like I said, for someone to really like, you know, whoa, that match delivered and it's all downhill, well, that's you know, your opinion. I respect that.
But you see, like, along the same tips, though, I mean, going with that style, I mean, A.R. Fox and Alex Reynolds were the very next match. When you guys are in the ring and they're getting a This Is Awesome chant, I think they're doing something right, my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, it does, I guess, depend on the fan, on the crowd. If you have seen A.R. Fox go, you know, with Sami Callihan, you've seen A.R. Fox go with Adam Cole, you've seen A.R. Fox go with some of the people he's gone with, it was an okay match, but nothing that would blow my mind on the caliber of what I've seen before. And, you know, seeing as he was previously, you know, until Teddy had to pull off the show, booked against Teddy Hart, I mean, that's a dream match. There's a big difference here. That's just, you know, not to say the match was terrible or anything even close to that, but that's what I'm measuring it against, that's all.
Okay.
Then, going off of that, the tag team gauntlet match, I honestly didn't see a whole lot of positive to this at all. The Nasty Boys...
Tia News remembered his lines, man. You gotta put that over. He hit that yo baby.
Yeah.
Right or wrong, I mean, has a lot of
stuff. Sure, I mean, if we're going case by case with it, I mean, I'm stuck between, like I said, I think, you know, we're taking a lot of chance on a lot of newer guys, and we're giving them the platform, and like I said, there's a lot of local talent up there that we're just trying out, that we're testing the water. Did it work? No. Didn't. Was it the strongest performance of anyone? No. Chalk it up as a loss, and I move on. Those guys, most of them I'm familiar, and it didn't click. It didn't get over. I'm fully fine with that. Completely. I mean, it was really against, and a lot of those guys, let me tell you, a lot of those guys were very, 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 very green, and they were put in their position. Also, with things like that, let me pull back the curtain even more, because this probably is a very, very, very smart show.
Yeah,
since I can tell by the way.
Real quick, he's a listener.
What's that?
Just giving a shout out to Larry Lester. I know he's a big listener of this show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, pulling back the curtain a little bit more, Washington Gold, when you have such people as the Nasty Boys, who I actually enjoyed, I thought they'd be more of a problem, but they were pleasant. And when you deal with. Were you at the other two PWS shows lately, or no?
No, this is actually my first one.
Okay. Mind you, I don't, and you've probably heard this, what do you do when you have two, dare say, I guess you can say the word legends or veterans or people who kind of have done a lot of stuff like the Nasties or like Powers of Pain. What do you do when you pull them aside and say, put yourself in our shoes and go, we have these local teams. We have up-and-comers that they may not have more than 2 or 3 years in the professional wrestling business whatsoever, but we'd like to make new stars of them. Could you do us a favor and work with them and maybe even possibly put them over? And they say, no. What do you do? You have to highlight them. So you have to put them somewhere. And this comes a lot of problems. Some guys are cool as shit. Some guys, it is what it is, but this goes into trying to make, you know, trying to make the most of a poor situation. And
you know,
some of those guys,
really touching the positives of what you have to work with at that point.
Yeah.
One of the things that stood out to me that I just thought was just completely awkward was Ox Baker, who's, I mean, talking about legends and everything, came out with this team of, well, you know, I call them what it is, I mean, these guys are morbidly obese, and, you know, I've never seen these guys before. You see a legend like Ox Baker, he makes two, like, painful laps around the ring. He kind of struggled his way around the ring for two laps and then kind of looked up and shrugged his shoulders like, oh, we lost, and I don't even understand the reason to involve him in that. I don't get it.
Ox Baker has managed the Fat Pack, the two guys you're referring to, Fat Pat and Fala. Ox Baker has managed Fala for the past 5 years at PWS, and since the Fat Pack formed a couple shows ago, Ox has been their manager. Pia News was with them also coming out. Maybe, I don't know, man, maybe Ox is just kind of scouting the other talent, looking to throw a hard punch in there. Who knows? Never know.
Let me ask you something.
Never know with Ox Baker, man.
Like I said, you know, yeah, how would you utilize Ox Baker? And would you?
I mean, that's a hard go. I mean, for a guy who has a big enough name and an established enough name like that, to me, it would be a sensitive situation. Not just put him with two jobbers that, you know, you feel that that's what you need to do. I don't know. This is why it comes off weird. Like me, I'm not a promoter. I don't own a company. So, yeah, this is exactly why I would love to hear, you know, you guys tell your side of what it is, because I have no idea. As a fan, I just look at it and go, that shit is awkward. I don't know.
Well, you're one of those guys. Let me tell you what you are. You're one of those guys that when someone comes out, for example, you call them, they have no value to you because they're morbidly obese. So I'm gonna pull back the curtain a little bit more. If you know anything about my history, actually one of those guys, the bigger one, Fat Pat, was actually my first student. You know, there's a guy that for, you know, whatever his weight may be, I think he's in the 300 to 400 pound range, and he used to be in the 400 to 500 pound range. His dream was professional wrestling. And I've actually worked with Pat, and I've seen Pat work, and even Pat said it was one of his worst performances. But as far as knowing him and training him, know he can bump and move and sell, and actually, you know, has been contacted by, you know, a few places and starting to get his name out there too. But by the fact that you judge someone like, oh, because they're morbidly obese, that they're too, you know, and when you use the word job, there's nothing wrong with that term, but the way you mean it is kind of to take them down a notch just because of their little thing, or putting them with Ox Baker. Now, you may hold Ox Baker as a legend in his rights, but to us, to me, yeah, he's a legend. He's been around, but to us, we're, you know, he comes down with one of our business partners, if you will, and we go, what do we do with Ox Baker? I don't know. I don't even know if he knows what's going on. Ox Baker doesn't know my name. I don't think he knows 90% of the locker room. He's just there to have a good time. And it's like, hey, you know, what randomness, throw him with this team and just have some fun. We don't take it to, we're put two fat guys together, call them the Fat Pack, and their match from the previous month was fantastic, and I've seen them do some pretty good stuff, and when given the right opportunity, the right circumstance, they do move like a Rikishi, or they do move like that. Do they have a chance to really gel that night? No, I don't think it was that. I don't think it was their fault, too. I think a lot of the other teams were even way, way, way more green and unpolished when compared to them, but like I said, you're basing this on personal preference, and you're basing this from a fan, and I respect that. I do. But to say, like, he took two laps, I mean, it is what it is. We're trying to give guys experience. We're trying to showcase guys and hide their positives and take away their weaknesses. And when you nitpick every little thing like that, things kind of fall apart, and nothing's good, and no one's happy. And then you focus on what you don't like and what you do like. I mean, I don't know what to say.
All right. I understand that.
I mean,
but
Ox Baker real quick. I mean, dude, he's 78 years old. I mean, you keep that in mind, too. I mean, he's 78 years old. The fact that he is even willing to do two laps around the ring is mind-blowing in itself. He's 78 years old.
Well, I'm not saying, hey, the guy's not doing moonsaults. What's the problem?
No,
I'm just saying, you know.
I mean, for me personally, I mean, as Pat hit upon with, like, you know, veterans that come in and, you know, sometimes want to do things, sometimes don't. I mean, I will say with Ox Baker, man, in 5 years, I mean, I've known him since he was a youngster at 73. Anything we ever asked him to do, he did. I mean, Ox Baker's even bled on our shows before, so I give the man all the credit in the world. He's 78 years old.
Right.
I mean, if I'm able, if at 78, I'm welcome at a wrestling show and I can do two laps around the ring. God friggin' bless. Like, really.
Right. Well, all right. Next matchup, you got Mil Máscaras versus Amory Del Sol. I had nothing bad to say about the match. You had a legend just went into the Hall of Fame, go up against one of the best up and coming guys as far as lucha wrestling goes in the business today. So I had nothing. That was like a good amount of, you know, passing the torch and a guy getting to work a legend, and it, you know, it was you guys that put them in the ring together. So there's nothing bad I could say about that. So this is one of the things.
I actually thought I didn't expect anything from that match. You know, I've heard stories before of Mil not being exactly the kindest guy in the world, and
right.
You know, him being as old as he is and stuff like that, and that it blew my mind. I mean, like, I wasn't expecting anything. I was actually constantly checking with Samurai, like, hey, you know, is everything okay? You know, I just want to make sure you're good. And I don't think anyone on any level could have asked for more out of what they did do. I mean, it was kind of, to me, it was kind of a little bit mind-blowing. Like, wow, you know, that just told everything I've heard about Mil Máscaras, to me, from my own personal experience, went right out the window. And I loved it.
He was a pleasure. So, pleasure to deal with from the second he walked in the building.
That's great. And then next match, again, nothing bad to say. Big Van Vader, a guy who, you know, I never thought I would see live, and, you know, it was a pleasure to see live. And Too Cold Scorpio, he's a guy who was always held up, no matter how many years go by. You pop him up in a ring against anybody, whether it's a young guy, a veteran, anything like that. Too Cold Scorpio is always held up. So I didn't have a problem in the world with that either. And, you know, Vader was surprisingly just right on his game for the most part. I had no problem with it. So I mean, that was that. Well, take a break from the matches for a second, just so I could, you know, highlight, you know, just some other things that, and I mean, I could just go right down the line as far as I guess production problems or whatever you want to call it. But these are part of what stood out that made it look bad overall. Like, you know, there's a lot of shows, I should say, that you'll go to, and you could pick out your few bad matches, but you can't base the whole show on that. But if you have things breaking all over the building throughout the show, you start to look around and go, what the fuck is going on? And that's a lot of what I saw. The show started out, and first thing I noticed is, all right, well, these aren't guardrails. This is a chain connected to poles. As I noticed that, I proceeded to watch a woman set her purse on the back end of it, and then someone else set a chair on the front end of it to keep that one pole in place. So I was like, wow, that's something else. Never seen that before. So that the one corner pole was held by a woman's purse and a steel chair. So I was like, oh, all right. And I don't know if that's like a technicality in order to have some form of barricade because it's mandated or whatever the case is, because you might as well not have a barricade if you don't need one, because I would argue that a steel chain is far more dangerous than no barricade. But I don't know.
I'll let you go. You let me know when it's my turn to talk.
Okay. A ring light almost fell on the crowd. You know, it obviously a lot of this was almost as I was, you know, it was pointed out to me, but of course it's very noticeable to everybody around. Ring light almost fell on the crowd. Then that became three ring lights. Hopefully your pay-per-view came off without, you know, that one corner wasn't lit. Hopefully it still came off well. I was in the crowd, so I wouldn't know. The entranceway almost fell when the Coco Beware match.
Coco really brought down the house, didn't he?
Yeah. There was a sticker put in the middle of the ring that I guess was, you know, supposed to be the logo, but not even halfway through the show, the sticker was already peeling up and sticking to the wrestlers, and just doesn't really look professional. And, you know, for this to be a 5-year anniversary, I would like to see a polished company go out there and just execute a phenomenal show, which on paper, there was no reason why not. And again, there was a good amount of matches that you guys went out there and you executed fully, especially, you know, bringing the great mood of delivering exactly what you said. But then again, in the main event, there was a hole in the ring. Sammy Callahan almost broke his fucking ankle. And if the great mood...
Oh, he did.
Yeah, he did. Okay. He almost broke his ankle, yes. And
talk to Sammy.
He didn't. Hmm?
You talked to Sammy.
Yes. And then from that, you know, I mean, if the Great Muta were to get hurt in the ring, I would imagine that would reflect horribly on you guys.
Did he get hurt? I mean, now I'm going to start here. You know, here's what you are. This is what you are. You're that guy. And what I'm going to say this is that what sucks is I think, realistically, you're trying to be the guy that has – you have a wrestling radio show, and you want to point out all these things so you and people listening, their perception towards you gives higher value. So in a way that you feel that some people are not doing wrestling right, you look like the savior and all be all because you know professional wrestling and everything else.
I let you finish.
You let me finish. Now here's where we got faced with the operation. This is my third time, the fourth professional show as far as really being on with PWS. This whole weekend's 3 and 4. Now coming along, between everything with booking the talent, anything you see before you. The Stack 2 shows, as you like to, you know, highlight, hey, thank you for Mil Mascaras and Great Muta, but, you know, the guardrails just aren't up to par for you. Well, I apologize for that. And if you want to donate guardrails, I'd be more than willing. And you're right, it is a fifth anniversary show, and Eric's been running this for 5 years on a different level where he'd run, you know, once every couple months, pull in a lot of great name talent. I came along, and I'm really trying to change up shift now. If you were there for the last two shows, you would know that production-wise, we've increased a little bit each and every time. I'm not the million-dollar man. I live in a basement in Ronkonkoma. I'm trying to kind of climb the ladder, if you will, by basing some success that I go on and purchase more and more things. And I have you know that wrestling ring that I have is actually was formerly Bam Bam Bigelow's ring, and I came along and I purchased it. And it is a little bit of an old ring. Now, moving ahead, I have to balance out the you know, make budget work and see what I can do and what I can try to make this company look professional, like putting a ring decoration, a ring decal in the middle of the ring. Now, yeah, it does say fifth year anniversary, and that Eric has done that, and he dealt with, you know, using outside companies. This ring is my own and I bought. And we want to make it look presentable and look nice for you, and we changed the rope colors, and we put decals on the turnbuckles and on the middle of the ring, and one did it out here, and it comes up, and I apologize that offends you, and I apologize that New Jersey doesn't have a state law with barricades, but a visual barricade is a little bit better than having no barricade at all. So, yeah, we did.
No, I wouldn't think so. I would think it's actually more dangerous for the fans, honestly.
Because
I've seen a million people overshoot a dive and hit the guardrail, but there's no way to spot yourself on chains that are being held up by a woman's purse. So, I mean, you could say that I'm just pointing stuff out to make you look bad and me look good, but that's honestly nowhere near the truth.
Can I ask you something? How many dives have you done to the outside?
No, I'm not a wrestler. I never claimed to be a wrestler. I never tried to claim that I was in the
business. But you just talked about spotting a dive. I mean,
Did anybody get hurt?
Did anybody get hurt in the crowd from these dives that were not spotted?
But a lot
correctly?
Of this is just luck that none of this did go wrong.
It's not a fact that you guys executed perfectly.
It's that you got lucky that nothing went wrong.
Now,
that's why I pointed out the hole in the rain.
I mean, we got lucky it didn't rain that day. We got lucky it wasn't 100 degrees that day.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
when Samurai Del Sol is diving to the floor, I have 100% confidence.
I am sure that your fans listening right now, all 20 of them, I am sure that they are, you know, were you so angered when Undertaker was lit on fire accidentally by Pyro? I mean,
no,
were you
pretty,
hard enough?
No.
You got me all wrong.
I'm trying to address things, and you're trying to spin them into something else, like I'm some douchebag
talks
shit about wrestling.
That's not my gig.
See, this is what I mean. I mean, if you're able to have actual conversation and not just try to spin me into someone who just creates controversy and I'm just trying to, like, make you guys look bad, it's not what I'm doing whatsoever.
Hey, Jay, listen. I mean, you said, okay, well, one of the ring lights fell. I will say this. Hey, you know what? The show before, we didn't have ring lights. We went out and bought ring lights. You say, hey, you know what? Let's try to make this look a little bit better. We went out and got a curtain, a nice curtain. You know, a new entranceway sign. The entranceway didn't even exist a couple shows ago. I mean, it's like, again, it's like we're not a major company owned by, like, an energy plant or a cable station. We're two guys are like, you know what? We want to go out and give wrestling fans enjoyable shows and give them their money's worth.
That's what we're. That's our goal. My goal from day one, PWS, is to run fun wrestling shows. Period. It was never to, you know, get a TV deal or, you know, do any crazy shit. I mean, it is a very simple format. We're going to run good shows that hopefully people come out and enjoy it. At the end of the day, you said yourself, even in spite of your criticism of, hey, like these barricades and this and whatever, the sticker on the ring, yeah, absolutely. But you know what? You said yourself, hey, I got my money's worth. So, I mean, that's what we're trying to do. And little by little, it's, again, you know, it's reinvesting our own money into upping the production to make it look better. I mean, even the iPay-per-view, that's our own company. We're not working with an iPay-per-view company. We have our own. You know, that's, I mean, I don't see anyone else doing that. I mean, you know, we're slowly trying to do things the way we want. You know, and like, I mean, like anything else, I mean, for every, you know, 10 positives, yeah, maybe something will go wrong. But, you know, hey, a light almost, oh, yeah, it almost did. It didn't. You know, our staff was right there. Yeah, the entranceway started tumbling down. You know who it would have hit? It would have hit me. I would say I ran under it. I'm not complaining about it. The guy's got it back up in 30 seconds. We'll give him credit on that. Shit happens. You know, I mean, does that take away from the show? I mean, do you look back on the show and say, wow, I saw Great Muta. I saw Mil Mascaris. I saw Vader. I saw Larry Legend sweating bullets in the ring. But, I mean, do you look back at that, or do you look back and say, fuck, man, that decal in the ring, that really sucks?
I look at it all. Like, I look at it all. I honestly do. I take the positives away. I take the negatives away, and I weigh it overall. It's not where I just look at the negative and I say, well, fuck all the positives. All I have is negative. That, you know, I look at all things, and especially as far as doing my own show, I have to cover everything. I have to tell people what I like, what I didn't like. That's how you cover a show.
Absolutely.
Well, the one thing that I just don't understand is that, in your opinion, what do you think about the current state of independent wrestling or wrestling in general? Do you think that it's very lively, or it's been pretty stale? It's been pretty crappy for years.
Well, honestly, currently, I think it's pretty on fire. I think there's a lot of good stuff going on. A lot of companies. There's more companies on iPay-per-view now than I've ever seen before. So I think there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of things going on, and a lot of different options, honestly. And there's a lot of companies doing a lot of good things. But everybody has their choice to what they, you know, they prefer or what they see as the best thing going. And I mean, personally, I could see, you know, things in all sorts of different companies that I could pull and like and say, well, this company just put on this. I thought that was great. This company put on this. I thought that was, you know, I think wrestling has a lot to offer for fans right now, as opposed to in the past where there was no competition.
Well, as far as someone, I mean, for that opinion, that's cool because you do think a lot of things going on. On our end, from 95%, if you talk to any wrestlers, whether it be WWE, Ring of Honor, TNA, if you ask them on a whole, they would say that professional wrestling is very struggling. It's been struggling for a long time. When compared it to obviously the late 90s and the boom that happened, is that really, and as it goes on, I mean, if you really look at the end-all, be-all, which is really WWE, their ratings are struggling. Business on a downward spiral. It needs all the help it can get. When a company like PWS comes along and tries to go, hey, we're doing everything in our power, we're financially betting the bank and putting on whatever we can, and you know it in your heart, and you know it in mine, and Eric knows it in his, that we're really trying to be creative and do something different. You can obviously tell by when's the last time you saw a card, an independent card that offered this quality of talent in this sort of way? And we're doing everything in our power to feed to that movement. We're trying to have another place for guys to go to work, for guys to come, for fans to come and enjoy and see, and people to order iPay-per-views and go, oh my God, I haven't seen Vader and Muta. Who is this guy, A.R. Fox? Who is this guy, Alex Reynolds? Who is Tony Nese? He just quit to, like, make it interesting for people again. That's kind of the whole the whole movement, the whole wave of stuff that I would think that someone who has a radio show about wrestling supports. Now, when you hear that, I'm leaving that event where people, 98%, 99%, maybe even, dare I say, like, almost 100% of people going, you know what, like, this just feels right, I can't wait for next time, and thank you very much. When you hear about someone such yourself going, you know what, I have the epic, I want to blog, or I want to speak about the epic fail that is this promotion, or you want to say, hey, what did you not like about the show, and you harp
on things like a ring decal and see how unprofessional looking things are, how bad things are, and really look under that microscope, to me, as a professional wrestler, as a promoter, as a fan, that pulls back slight from the movement, and I go, why bother? Why do that sort of energy? Because if I was just a fan and untrained guy, I'd be like, well, those fucking guardrails suck, and they do suck, and believe me, I'd love to have guardrails, and if you know a guardrail company, I would love to have them, but for the time being,
right,
I can get them. So instead of going, like, hey, holy shit, the entranceway, which to me was pretty funny, almost came down on Coco, and he deserves it because I don't really like him too much, and the sticker comes up the ring, ah, shit, that didn't hear. Instead of that, it's taken upon, like, these guys are unprofessional. Yeah, the ring light came down. You know what's funny? Kevin Matthews, who actually brought the light with him, who actually got the light for us to put it up to make the lights better for the crowd to see, God bless his heart, is actually the one that fucking broke it during his hardcore match. And, like, you know, it sucks on us, and it really does. Like, yes, I would love guardrails. I do. But when you hear stuff like that, man, it kind of hurts my heart because it's like, you know, here we are trying to bet in the bank and pushing forward. You know, we need more I wish more places did this, and they don't. And from the wrestler's point of view, they're going, fuck, I hope these guys keep running. I hope something else happens. I hope maybe they get a TV deal. I hope maybe they can get some sort of syndication. IPPVs go through the roof and something like that. Just at least some, so fans have an outlet.
I was all over the second I heard the diary. See, when I first saw all the things that you guys were doing on paper, I immediately was like, man, I'm impressed. I mean, these guys are pulling in more talent than I've ever heard of. Known names, TV names that, you know, random wrestling fans would know, not even the indie guys, you know, the just people all over the world. You know, I mean, the names that you guys were booking, people would know of, and it would get people's attention. So I looked and I said, man, I got to try to talk to this guy. And that's when I got you on Eric, and, you know, you gave me the interview and all that. And I was really impressed by a lot of stuff you said. And, you know, next thing you know, I hear iPay-per-views. I'm like, man, you guys are going to do great with this shit. Just off of everything I've heard, everything I've seen, I just was like, wow. I showed up to the show. I saw a bunch of things that just looked really shoddy and stuff falling apart all over the place. And, I mean, there was no ring steps. Speaking of Larry Legend, he needed a folding chair to get into the ring because there was not even ring steps. So the whole time I was going, how do they afford this talent? Man, holy shit, look at this card. It's ridiculous. How do they afford it? Well, there's no ring steps. The lights are falling down. There's no guardrails. There's, you know, the entranceway falling down. There's a sticker coming off the ring. This is what I'm seeing. This is not me trying to find a negative. This is me going, wow, I can't wait, and then going, what the fuck is all this shit falling apart for? That's
so
where I'm coming
from. You were
from.
Hoping that I was secretly the son of a panda energy, and that I had all this, you know, it's way in the, it goes, to me it looks like this, hey, we could add another talent that people really want to see and try to get by on that and get the people in the building, and then as show goes on, like as the show goes on, last show the ropes were a different color, they're kind of shoddy, this time we're like, hey, let's make them orange, let's get the cows on them, step up, it's a slow build, man. Like I said, I take it as almost a compliment at the fact that someone's going, hey, you know, I'm going to digest this show. It obviously matters. We're gaining momentum. Like I said, hey, if you're a carpenter, feel free. You know, we could use some steps. You know, we could use. We're slowly growing. You got us against the wall, going, fuck. You know, I don't have this from the get-go. Most companies that start up are either spinning off of a company that's already successful, or they have some sort of rich money mark behind them, or someone that really contributes a lot. We don't. We're strictly from scratch. That literally we were outside trying to build stuff, you know, the two nights before, the three nights before, to make sure everything goes good. We really are literally a homegrown company. So at the end of the day, you know, I apologize for the technical difficulties. But like I said, it's look one way or look the other. And, you know, next time I will make sure, like, you know, since, you know, Sammy Callahan doesn't break his ankle, you know.
Well, you know, overall, I think what it is on paper, you guys looked like everything. You had your shit together from top to bottom. Not only that, you guys were about to turn the corner and be one of the top indie promotions, doing a completely different thing than, like you said, the Ring of Honors, the Dragon Gates, doing a different thing and using the names and stuff like that to such a high level that, man, like, it all points were covered. Now, to say that, you know, you're a young up-and-coming, you know, you need steps, you need people to help you with this, you need people to help you with that, that also, I have a lot of respect for that type of company as well. But it was painted a different way than what you're actually doing, and that's the only reason why I come off of it with the criticism I do. Because
if I may ask, I mean, how is anything painted any different? How am I really pretty straightforward and honest, and I think more brutally honest than anyone else in wrestling? I mean, to be blunt. I mean, what was painted differently to you? What was your perception that it was crushed by not seeing ring steps? I'm not following.
Well, no, because when you book a, you know, 15 guys that have been on TV and you haven't seen that on cards before, as well as, you know, a good 7 wrestlers who were, you know, top of the indies right now, and you see that all together, you're like, first off, I don't even know how he affords this. I don't know how these people are affording this. This seems like a ton of talent to put on one card. So you would assume that the ring was together, that the normal everyday wrestling stuff that, you know, you get 25 fans in some of these wrestling shows and they have ring steps. So,
and,
I mean, I just assume that.
And admire those steps, get a photo op in front of them. I mean, they probably got some good-looking steps over there, not going to lie. I mean, we don't want to take everything from everybody else. I mean, we have the great Muda, and they got fancy ring steps, you know? I mean, take it where you want to go, that's all.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, if that's your trade-off, then I understand. Fine. I mean, just you know, spare the ring steps, spare the guardrails. We need help, but we're booking a top-notch show. And, you know, anyone who points out that, wow, like half of the stuff that normal wrestling companies have around the ring isn't here, but you're a douchebag for bringing it up, then I get it. I understand what they're doing.
Wait, I didn't say you're a douchebag for bringing up.
But that's the general vibe that you're putting across, that I'm a guy who's pointing out negative when it's normal stuff that every wrestling company has. But
no,
I'm fucked up for thinking you should have that.
In fact, you know, for every wrestling company that you've worked for, and like I said, I'll take that as a jab because I'll have you know that ring steps are actually banned in Ohio Valley Wrestling, which is developmental for WWE at one point, because Jim Cornette tripped and fell over them, and he actually removed them because he didn't like them. Now, the thing is that, like, it's just the way it is. It's almost like you're trying to, like, one-up. We're showing our true colors. We're going, hey, we just want this to work. And because you're finding, like, nitpicky things, it's almost like a little painful to listen to, going like, hey, you know, I don't know, shit, my computer's messing up. But, like I said, believe me, I know these things, and this whole thing is a two-man circus. It's me and Eric doing everything. So, like I said, I don't think you're a douchebag for doing so. It's just the tone of matter. It'd be way different if you're like, hey, how come you guys don't have ring steps? I just want to understand, you know, it's the way you're saying it.
Well,
the way you're coming across.
I got to, you know, reflect back. And if you actually listen to how I started this, and you can listen to how I am now. And I've gotten more aggressive because it became, oh, well, you're one of those guys. You're just looking
you
for
are.
That. You're trying to put yourself over. And that's how it got spun to the
you
point
are.
Now
that's the
where, no, I'm not.
Show.
That's fucking ridiculous. That's fucking ridiculous to think that I'm some guy that's trying to put myself over when I'm trying to get. I mean, that's insane. That's crazy.
The whole point of having this show is that you're not comfortable with being just a person in the crowd. You want to have a more respected opinion. That's why you have this. That you want to be a little bit
because,
more than what you are.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's what
be,
it is. That's why I've had wrestlers on this show that nobody's ever heard of, so the fact that they can help get themselves over and let them plug their stuff and do interviews with people, so that way they can get their word out there that wasn't getting out there. It's because it's all about me. That's why. Because I pay for this every month and get nothing in return, and I do this for why? Why did I have Eric on to begin with, to get myself over?
No, because it's probably more attractive to have the, you know, go back and forth with people who are, you know, promoting shows or that are kind of behind the scenes, and it would be for just a rant for, you know, 20 to 30 minutes or hour long, whatever it be. I mean, understand that. Look, I host a podcast, TuneAdWrestlers.com. I mean, I do it. Anyone that's in wrestling that does anything as far as a podcast or a radio show, you do it because it's, hey, look at me. That's kind of the whole point of it. You want to be noticed. It's not for the betterment of profession. You've clearly shown that, you know, you're not doing this for the love of wrestling because you're trying to make us look slightly professional by going.
J-Cat Morris, I got to interject here. Is your hidden agenda, do you know someone that sells ring steps? You're trying to get some business? Is that what this is about right now?
No, because of course, yeah, I'm trying to get myself over. I'm trying to sell ring steps, guardrails. I have the market fucking cornered on all of that shit. This is the delusion that you guys are putting out there that, like, it's all about me. I'm only bringing this shit up because there's something in it for me. It doesn't make a fucking difference. If you guys had fucking ring steps that your fucking commentator had to,
please,
or your ring announcer didn't have to climb up on a fucking chair to get to the ring while you're on iPay-per-view, not to mention fucking day two, I read the results, and Larry had to call people down from the bleachers so your seats didn't look fucking empty on day two. So apparently all of it's
there
working just perfectly, isn't it?
No, that's my point. You want companies to suffer at the point of you looking. Day two, our attendance was light. I ate it bad. The iPay-per-view was successful. It did well. It's a step in the right direction. The other last two shows were really successful. June 1st was successful. June 2nd, boy, did I eat it bad. And I am not afraid to say that. And I'm not afraid to say that Larry Legend needed the extra exercise to get up and down.
Do you think that any of the things that I'm saying isn't me just fucking putting myself over and maybe is part of why the second day wasn't as good? Do you think I don't give a fuck at all, really?
I don't think ring steps draw crowds.
Not ring steps, but I mean everything.
And
well,
I can prove to you from a human's perspective is that you're very heated and you're very defensive where I'm the one actually.
Right now, yeah, I'm being double teamed by two people who will take none of their harm for, like, actual criticism instead of saying, hey, you know,
no,
you aren't really there.
I hate
you
my grill. I need
that
thing.
I don't like that shit. I've never been...
Scramble. We agree with points that you made on that. Absolutely. I mean, thus far, you had nothing really negative to say about the wrestling show, the wrestling show itself, the actual matches. You put over most of it. The one thing that you had an issue with was the tag scramble, and Pat said, hey, I agree with a lot of the points that you're making. I disagree with some of the words that you're using, but I agree with some of the points you're making.
I mean, you know, you could sugarcoat it if you like, but
No, that's my point. I don't sugarcoat. That's the whole point of PWS, the whole point of thing, and that's what makes me defensive, is that I'm not sugarcoating. I'm saying second match with tag scramble wasn't very good. It didn't click. It was awful.
It didn't work.
As far as the second day, like, I'm not trying to – I'm just pointing out this little thing in a particular tone going, yeah, I kind of really think this is what it is, and I've proven my reasons, my relevance, and ask people listening right now if I have too. But you went along the line and get defensive and go, you can't even fill the building. That's why you tell – yeah, I know that. It was the second night. Didn't do well in attendance. Thanks. Like, I don't know. Like,
yeah,
and,
but that's
take,
the fact that, like,
yeah,
you got to put myself over, and you guys are pretty much doing okay, and there's no reason for me to be, you know, saying things I'm saying, and I'm hurting you guys, but – Some of the negative things I'm saying, maybe that's part of what's going wrong.
You're hurting the movement of that. There's like one sort of movement. You can go like, you know what, look at it one way, or you can look at the other. And
mm-hmm.
you can choose, like, you can say that, like, it's kind of funny, you know, the or like, you can put things in a particular way. I don't mind. Like I said, I don't sugarcoat anything. I could tell you everything and will. And believe me, so where I bombed in certain areas. I told you, I bombed in attendance the second night. It was brutal. The chairs were all filled. That's roughly 200 people in that thing, and the bleachers were spread pretty thin. And believe me, I wanted to walk into the parking lot and blow my brains out on the second night, going, "How the hell does this happen?" I thought, you know, to try to make the car different, it didn't work. The iPay-per-view show had more people from the feedback going on, had more positive things to say show-wise about the second night than they did.
Night two was an amazing show, top to bottom. It was a shorter show; it's more condensed. Matches were every match was phenomenal on that show.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Like,
I mean, my
thing with you is that you sound very, very intelligent. You do know professional wrestling. And I think that's the only thing I dare, and I'm not saying like you're, like, I'm saying like you have the opportunity on this platform to really go. I've seen the guys that have been the ones that, like, you know, I want to point out and harp on all the bad, or, you know, I'll put over what's good, but I'm really going to, like, put this sly, condescending tone. And those are the guys that fade away quickly. You need to really, like, really figure out, hey, what is each and every company trying to do? What are these guys' intentions? And am I going to do everything in my power to support that? Or am I going to go on a show and say, epically failing the route? That's my issue, man. That's my point.
Well,
that when it comes down.
And honestly, I got to tell you, the majority of what I do on this show is finding across the indies what I like and putting it over. That's the majority of what I do. And, I mean, you can't put me in a light where all I'm doing is pointing out negatives to make myself look higher, because you don't listen to my show. You don't understand what I do week to week. I had Teddy Hart on last week. We did, you know, I did the interview with Teddy Hart. We did a good thing. I had a little bit of, you know, other stuff to say about another show that they're putting negative light on things, and some stuff that Frank Goodman's doing that I feel is negative towards the wrestling business. But outside of that, the week before, I had Nick Burke on for 4 hours and did an interview with him and talked about all sorts of wrestling. First interview he's had to my knowledge.
Jesus
Christ. Yes, 4 hour interview. Yeah, and
who wants
you know,
to listen to
is,
a 4 hour interview on anything?
I don't know. I don't know. I only put it out there. It doesn't matter to me. It's content that other people might not be doing, and as well as that, I'm putting positive light. I'm giving people opportunities that they might not have had before. It's not. It's not about me. It's about a different brand of radio show or podcast or whatever you want to call it. For maybe people want to listen. That's it. And you know,
so
I put over
Gorilla
in California.
Like
I put over.
Almost, you by what you're saying right now, you're almost like the PWS of Blog Talk Radio. You're trying to do something completely different. I'm saying you're almost like the PWS of Blog Talk Radio based on what you're saying right now.
No, he has way better equipment.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we're not in studio guests. We don't have live microphones. I mean,
yeah. I mean,
but hey, you know what? I mean, in all honesty, man, like if one of your biggest criticisms of a double shot is the decal on the ring got peeled up, that's awesome. Because I mean, obviously we're doing something right. It's been your top three gripes. The sticker in the ring got messed up.
No, I was going to go over the rest of the show and everything like that, but at this point I'm not going to give you that because there's no reason for it. It's come down to I'm that guy. I'm trying to put myself over, so there's no there's no reason for that. I got another guy coming on at 10, so I got to wrap this up, honestly.
Right.
You can put out there whatever you want to say about I'm just that guy and all of that shit, but either way, it's my show. I'm going to move on soon. Go ahead.
You are a fraud. You won't even, on your own show, you won't even argue back and forth with points because you're defensive. You, my friend, are an absolute fraud. You want to go back and forth and have a podcast and have an enlightened
opinion?
I'm a
fraud.
Try to come to me on an intelligent
How am I a
you
fraud?
You won't even go on. I'll go back and forth with you. We're on your show. I have my own podcast.
Right.
I may not agree with the person, but prove
that's,
your point.
I
don't know
fine.
What point you're trying to prove.
You put me over saying I'm intelligent and 2 seconds later. I mean, you seem to be the fraud because you don't even know where you're sitting at. So, I mean, I'm not the one insulting you guys, you know? You're the one telling me I'm that guy, I'm a fraud, I'm this, I'm that. I never put you guys on that type of level. I didn't put any words on you guys, but, you know.
You did take a defensive stance and you did say that, you know, as did I did for the things like, hey, I think you harp on this more than that. You took a shot at the attendance to try to hurt my feelings. Like, what I'm saying is you can continue on with your points, and then you go, I have a radio show. I'm not going to give you that platform. That, my friend, is phony. That, my friend, is awful. You should continue on.
You've had
so
almost an hour to double-team me on how, like, you can do no wrong. And even if you are wrong, I'm fucked up for bringing it up, and I'm taking you down a notch. Because
I
bring it up.
How it came up. I totally admit, Coco Beware almost knocked the fucking entranceway over, and it was, to me, it was hysterical. At the same time, crap, we got to fix that little thing and do that. I'm just telling you what happens. Wait, where is my embellishment? Where is my harping on? I'm going back and forth with the things you feed me, and you're going, I'm not going to give you this platform to think.
That was just now. I mean, you had almost an hour to give your side, and it turned into I'm that guy, and none of my stuff is credible because I'm trying to put myself over. So that's amazing.
Your stuff is
I'm
credible.
Giving
that's
my
why
criticism
we're on this
as a friend.
I'm valuing your criticism too, but I'm pointing out what kind of criticism you have. That's my point.
Okay.
I'm saying
that's
that.
This stuff I've never heard before, so it's good to hear.
With what? Well, I'm saying your opinion, every opinion holds weight, and I challenge that, especially when a fan, comes along and watches a show and says, this is an absolute disaster. And then Eric cares about this more than I do. You know, Eric asked me beyond. I was like, yeah, fine. Where he actually goes above and beyond. If you check any of our PWS Facebook, our website, anyone that deals, as I explained with the Muda gear and stuff like that, we try to go above and beyond what any promotion does to make people happy and understand what their gripes are and then figure out what their angle is or what they're trying to do, and that's all I'm doing here. And then when you say that there's another half of the show that you can talk about and you're going, I don't want to do it because you've pointed me and pinned me in the corner, well, you can pin me in the corner. You can hear the sound of my voice. I do host a podcast myself. If someone wants to argue with me all day or go, hey, I don't understand this, I let them. You, on the other hand, want to turn into a little ball and cut me off.
Nah, there's no ball. There's no ball at all, honestly. And I mean, one of the other main criticisms, I'll give you this, is to put on semi-main event before the Great Muta, to put on Veda Scott versus Brittany Savage is a fucking horrible idea. Horrible idea.
That's right.
To say that, you know, Eric told me in the IM or whatever that you like to bring the crowd down before the main event.
That's
amazing. Hold on, let me finish what I'm saying. So, you know, to bring the crowd down before the main event at 11:30 at night, you think that's a great idea? So, all right, go ahead, explain.
It's an anniversary show. Shows will be longer. I mean, do you not see girls' matches as semi-mains in WWE? I guess, I mean, they're not hip to the format either.
It's a horrible idea there, too.
Well, here's the thing that, you know, with all due, that's actually done out of a few things. One, our shows ran entirely too long, and that's completely my fault as a promoter. They always tend to, except the second night ran appropriate, but even I feel that ran too long. You know, people go, oh, it was really, you know, it was good. No, to me, the shows always run too long, matches run too long, and that's my responsibility because, you know, I'm not relaying to them, hey, guys, kind of shorten the time, kind of do that. With the show running really, really long the first night, you know, roughly around, I think, what, 3.5 hours, something like that, we wanted to highlight people, intermission goes long, whatever excuses be, that's on me. As far as breaking it up and squeezing in the women's match there, that's kind of a thing that's been taken, that goes back to a lot of, you don't want to have, you know, you have want to have a show that's built, that is a roller coaster of things, because also out of respect to Great Muta, whatever I'm pronouncing it, whatever. He, you know, for example, with him, there's a reason why isn't in a singles match. He's been through war. You know, his body hurts. That's why it was tag match. That's why
I'm not questioning that at all.
Well, here's what I want to say to you is that do we or do we not go put Muta in a position where he feels like he has to, you know, feels challenged by not having his moment? Do we do that to them, or do we go, you know, similar to if WrestleMania was it 17 or 18 where Hogan fought Rock, and that same situation happened, and then they had the women's match in between, and then they followed with Hunter and Jericho, and everyone said that obviously it didn't work. Why would they put on a women's match after that? Well, that was out of respect. What was backwards was Hogan and Rock should have easily went last, and that Hunter and Jericho should have been that, then the girls' match, because you don't want to put people in a position that are you know, out of respect, where they feel like it's almost a respect thing, and it is a way to give something different, not necessarily bad, but it's a way to do something different, and just kind of come up and go, you know, there's one, I got to stay around for this. You don't want to go with, you know, a stronger match with, like, you know, say we would have put the Tommy Dreamer, Dan Moff match with Kevin Matthews,
all right,
really kicked ass, or A.R. Fox and Alex, for that, because it's almost too similar. It's a way to break it up, and to say it's a horrible idea, that's why. I mean, you can say it's a horrible idea. I completely understand that, but that's why we do it. That's why.
I mean, that's your choice. Honestly, you run the company. I can only comment on it. That's all it is.
What would you do, sir? What match would you put on right before Great Muta?
Something that's strong. I would put on a stronger match before your main event. I think the second half of your card should be really strong. I know maybe I'm successful companies, but I honestly think that's what it should be. And maybe I'm wrong because I don't have a company, but, you know.
Well, the only thing I'm saying is that, like, you know, if you have a greater idea, you can say something. One of the rules of professional wrestling is, you know, if you don't like an idea, the only way the thing is, you go, hey, I don't like that idea. Here's what I would do. And your thing is, it's stupid. I go, okay, well, how would you do it?
Well,
I don't know.
Surely be going in business for myself if I was booking your card, wouldn't it?
Not really, because I kind of asked you, like, hey, what would you do? I really would legitimately want to know, because maybe I can keep it in mind. I mean,
I would definitely follow the blueprint of me just putting myself over, and that's not what I'm doing, so
no,
you're going to have to figure it out.
You know, I apologize that, you know, your feelings are hurt that bad, but I actually do give your opinion weight. I think people. I'm not being condescending. I really would like to know what
if we didn't care. We wouldn't be on the line with you for an hour, giving a paying fan such individual attention.
I mean, that's the point of it. I mean, we really do go out of our way because we actually do give a crap what people have to say. If we didn't care, we'd be like, all right, screw you, you know. You don't like it? Well, too bad. We're saying, hey, Jay, you had a problem with the show? Let's hear it. Let's hear what the problems are, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's a little different than what you're saying, but it's fine.
I don't know what's different about it. That's kind of what we're doing.
Yeah. It's more or less, like I said earlier, it's you two are going to come up, you're going to gang up, and you're going to, again, put me in some kind of place where you think that you're going to tell me I'm that guy.
Oh,
you haven't listened
talking?
To a single one of my shows
you
haven't been
on.
Here's the other part. Hold on. Here's the other part. You're not going to talk over me to steal my show. Even though you run a wrestling company and you came on my show, doesn't mean you're going to talk over me when I start to talk. That's not going to happen.
That's right. Shut up, Eric.
Right. So either way, because I honestly don't have a problem with cutting you guys off because
that's right.
I've gotten to the point where I already know where you guys are going to go. And it's like I had negative criticism towards that. I was going to come on and I was going to talk about it. And like I've talked about many things. I've talked about things positive. I've talked about things negative. I mean, if you've listened to one show of mine other than the one you've been on, Eric, you might have something to say other than fucking what you said tonight. So that's the difference, is you're just basing things on the first show where I put nothing but positive on every single thing and just gave you complete interview and gave you complete free reign to say whatever you wanted. And then the second I had something negative to say, you had to bring another person on, and then you had to find a way to spin everything I said into fucking you're just that guy, you're just that fucking Mark who has negative shit to say to put yourself over.
Never.
Which was no comment you. That I got the fucking first time that I had you on. So go ahead.
From a person who I, you know, I admire broadcasting very greatly, and from someone who has their own podcast like I do, having such dropping the F-bomb so much may not
that's
be the
my business.
Greatest.
Dan?
I know it is. I know. And for context, it does help. But for – I just don't understand why, you know – like I said, we're just – here's the thing. When you wrote on – we kind of, Eric does this way more than I do. I'm oblivious to this stuff. After the shows, and he saw that, he's like, dude, he's like, you see this? I'm like, ah, what is it? He's like, well, the guy has a podcast or a radio show, and he, you know, was just harping on that. I read it myself. I was like, wow, like, just, you know, the epic fail, whatever the wording, I can't remember it, and I wish I did. And we see that. Like, that's not exactly the most kindest, most positive things, and then it's automatically us to come on in defensive position, and I wasn't, I really wasn't, but then when I hear things like that, I go, well, Jesus Christ, you know, and then, like I said, I've never called you a derogatory, I said you're that guy, and I still think you're that guy, I stand by that, but it doesn't mean, like, you know, whether you want to think that way or not, your feelings are getting hurt, my feelings are getting hurt in a way, like, that you possibly agree that you're helping the movement by doing such a thing, and you're not, you know, I just don't, you know, you question different things, and you have your opinion. You got to understand, like, I have my opinion, too, and it's based on years and years and years of professional experience inside and outside the ring, and you have your opinion, too, and I respect that. But I tell you why
right.
such a thing, and then you go, well, I don't like it. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's entirely what your thing. I'll ask you, what would you like better? And you go, I don't know. Or
right.
this is what, you know, I would follow. I'm trying to level with you here. I'm not trying to come on here and insult you. I'm not one of those. I try to do the other things, like other promotions get really, like, you know, make a, oh, what the fuck? Well, I never try to do that. Ask any talent I deal with, any person, I try to keep a level head at all times and just kind of express what I do. And I think my mission on this show is just to come on and not even defend PWS. It goes, well, why do that? Why kind of,
right.
why,
right,
why
well,
take that point of view?
Right, okay. Well, I mean, thanks for coming on, guys, because I do have another interview to do, which, of course, is I'm just going to put myself over for another couple hours.
You're
so,
you are. Okay, I tried here, folks. 2.5wrestlers.com. You want to hear more of an honest podcast? You, my friend, won't argue your point. Go interview Nick Burke. Tell him I said hi. He'll have plenty of good things to say about me. But
yeah, that was cute. So now we're not gonna continue to put these guys over. And hold on, Nick.
Yes. Yep.
Hey, if you can hang on 1 second, I want to play a track real quick, get myself a little fucking relaxation after this fucking interview. And then I'm going to get to you, Eric.
I wish I would have been home, and I wish I would have been at my computer to be able to listen to it. I'm so mad. Now I got to listen to it. I do love the guys at PWS, though, and I was very upset to hear that you guys had a disagreement, because I love all the guys at PWS. And I'm not saying that just to babyface myself. But
yes,
what you
they're
do
phenomenal people. But I'm just going to play a track, let myself relax for 4 minutes or so, and then I'll come back and we'll do this thing, all right?
Okay, you got it.
All right, man.
It's a killer shit, guys.
Living with their lives on the line.
For young guns coming up during these times.
For police who find drugs letting niggas slide.
For niggas out slinging like 4 in the night.
For your man's not snitching when the pressure is tight.
For pistols that don't jam when it's time to strike.
For bootleg liquor on a Sunday night.
This be the realest shit you heard in your life.
Yo, when the gas reveal, your cash get peeled, and that's the deal. Fuck the bitch ass, switch fast, niggas that lack the real. When the slug burst, G-Rap be aiming at your mug first. Niggas is bloodthirst, to see who get plugged worse. We dug earth the place, you put the nickel bladers through your facial. Bullets ain't racial, kid, they only hate you. My nine'll seem like it's a time machine, be seed ain't you. Jacking you more than Ripper, my fist's an organ shifter. The human organism lifter, you'll be hearing organs if you're leaving orphans. If you let these fools hit you where the law split you. A four pitcher, the bump head. But those that don't let accurate shots in back of your knot. Leaving one dead, G-Rap Havoc and Prodigy. Let's put these fish niggas where bodies be done. Yo, if it gotta be, it gotta be, it gotta be. Niggas living with their lives on the line.
For young guns coming up during these times.
For police who find drugs letting niggas slide.
For niggas out slinging like 4 in the night.
For your man's not snitching when the pressure is tight.
For pistols that don't jam when it's time to strike.
For bootleg liquor on a Sunday night.
This be the realest shit you heard in your life. When the gas spits, some niggas get blown off the atlas. The hatless, unsolved mystery. Reenactments, get practice. What you lack is, you think like the average. Jake's dumbfounded, leaving crime scenes can handle. Nothing but cannons, got conspicuous. Like a laminate of branding with a cereal scratch. Bad apple out of the bag. Gun it, maybe like that. If I could push back the clock, probably leave it like that. Draw blood for my niggas, G.O.P., Solidity and Twin. And Twin is not here, plus my kin. Killer B forever with me. Quick to set it with me. And to QB, they show love throughout the years with me. You got guns, we got guns, the serious ones. Leave foul powder stuck in your lungs. We come from where niggas look out for they dun-duns. Love never disrespect, hit niggas with redirect.
For street niggas living with their lives on the line.
For young guns coming up during these times.
For police who find drugs letting niggas slide.
For niggas out slinging like 4 in the night.
For your man's not snitching when the pressure is tight.
For pistols that don't jam when it's time to strike.
For bootleg liquor on a Sunday night.
This be the realest shit you heard in your life. Never prejudge, it be the humble that'll squeeze slugs. It be the one standing still that'll peel guns. Spill blood for my thugs, thugging for me. Man, you don't wanna get involved, fucking with P. I spent more nights healing, less nights chilling. The more shots they hold, the better they feel it. We'll be the dealings, some killers like to hide behind specs. Others got blatant disrespect, and the rest are so young that you wouldn't even expect to be bursting off guns like a Vietnam vet on the steps, sitting in the staircase bent, thinking on ways to take another man's head, go to war with niggas that's against what I rap. I settle things with a heavy metal fifth, change clips, switch clothes after I spit, place niggas back in their space, fuckers on your mind, kid.
For street niggas living with their lives on the line.
For young guns coming up during these times.
For police who find drugs letting niggas slide.
For niggas out slinging like 4 in the night.
For your man's not snitching when the pressure is tight.
For pistols that don't jam when it's time to strike.
For bootleg liquor on a Sunday night.
That was something else, man. It really was.
I'm sorry I didn't hear it. I wasn't at home. I had just gotten home, so I missed it. Who was speaking on that?
What's that?
Who was speaking on the, who are you talking to?
Well, right now, yeah.
What? Hello? 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 Yep.
Yeah, okay, I hear you now.
Yep, can you hear me now?
Yep,
can
yep,
hear me now?
Definitely. All right. Yeah, it's definitely coming.
All right. Okay, who were you speaking to?
Eric Tapout and Pat, the owners of PWS.
Okay.
It was weird, just to give you a quick rundown. I know this has nothing to do with Nick Burke, and I'm not attaching you to this in any way, shape, or form. But I went to the show on Friday. I previously had Eric Tapout on my show to promote his stuff before I had even seen his company, just seeing what he did on paper and really liked what he was doing. Ended up, you know, going to the show. I had some negative things to say, and, you know, I just put out a post like, hey, man, and I do this shit after every show I go to, you know. Sometimes I'll be like, oh, that was a great fucking show. You know, I'll tell you all about it on Thursday. Or sometimes I'll be like, oh, there's some bullshit there. Wait till I get at that on Thursday. That type of thing. So Eric immediately got on and was like, oh, that's something else. You know, here's a challenge. You know, have me on Thursday, and I'll respond to everything you say and this and that. So I'm like, all right, fuck it. You know, and for those who don't know, you know, I actually talked to Nick and actually pushed Nick back an hour when he was my initial guest. So, I mean, they got on me for, oh, wow, oh, you ran out of time for us? Okay, you're ducking us. And I'm like, dude, I pushed my fucking guest back an hour just to have you guys on to explain your side of shit that, you know. And they turned it into, I'm just putting myself over. I only do this show so I can make myself look better than the shows I watch and all this other bullshit. And I'm just like, all right, well, I gave him as much time as I could, and it turned into just a shit fest. But
I do remember I did say, I was like, listen, you can talk to them. Like, I knew it was going to be able to have gone for like a good 2 to 3 hours talking to them. And I wish, you know what,
yeah.
I kind of wish that maybe I was on the line as well with them. Be able to have interjected myself as a third party who hadn't even seen any of it and just go by the both of these, because the thing is, like, there's different, like, outlooks by, like, everybody, pretty much, you know? And
of course,
you know,
of course.
Like,
and
you know,
I
you
try
might,
to give an open
one,
forum
you
for
might
that.
See it one
but
way, they might see it another way, and then, like, there's so many different contributing factors on how a show can and is run. And
right.
A lot of times, like, with people like that, like them, like, they do know the business for a great deal. And I,
sure.
Pat Buck is, like, he's very, very good at the in many aspects of the business, if not all. And, you know, when you're running a wrestling show on the indie level, it's very hard to appease every single person. So it might come off as looking shabby to the fans. However, there's times where if Eric wants something to be done, and they say to the wrestlers, listen, this is about to be done, the wrestler's still, no, this is what I'm doing. And whether it's a name or a nobody, you know, like, this is what I'm doing. And it's like, it's showtime. You can't replace them right away. Like, you know, sometimes, you know, so sometimes they get back, you know, the promoter, you have to, it sucks that the fan has to do this, but sometimes you have to not put all the blame on the promoter. Sometimes it's like the whole entire family of the show. If it comes
right.
off not as entertaining as you expect it to be, because they're trying to appease everybody. And just it gets to showtime. It's like, dude, now I gotta just get it out there and do it. It's not might not be exactly what I want, but this is what I got, and I have to do it to be able to appease everybody. Because, like, I'm you know, like, they don't bother, like, the fans. I mean, the wrestlers don't bother you until showtime, and you know, when you're a promoter, and that's the worst time to bother a promoter. You know, or a booker, because
right.
they're trying to get this stuff going, and they can't without the help of the wrestlers. Now, a lot of times the wrestlers, you know, they might not know, but they're going into business for themselves when they don't know it, you know, because they're also trying to protect themselves, you know. So it's I don't know what happened. I don't know what you guys talked about. I don't even know what happened on the show.
Right.
However, I like. From both aspects, from a fan's point of view, if you see a crappy show and it looks good on paper and you get there and you put out your money and it's a crappy show, you're disappointed. And from the promoter's aspect,
yeah.
if you put all this time to go and try to put on a show and then the cards that you are dealt that day are different than the cards that you had lined up, then, like, it's so hard to just try and get there and do the best that you can. You know what I mean? So it's like, I feel for everybody. And I hate that, like, now I sound like I'm, like, I do this a lot. I sound like I'm being, like, you know, everybody's friend. But I tend to now.
Nah, dude.
Like,
that's what, I didn't want to even involve you and to take sides or any of that. It's not about that.
But, like, I'm just saying in general, like, I do that now a lot because I'm kind of stepping back from the business. I'm doing stuff on another end of the business. And, like, I see things so differently now that I'm not actually working shows as much. And I'm involved, like, very different. So,
right.
Like, you know, like, it's, you know, like, it sucks that the fans didn't have, you know, had the experience that they could have and should have and maybe want to have. And it sucks that, you know, I know that Pat and Eric are better than putting on a crappy show, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, and it sucks that you guys had to have that conversation and kind of, it
yeah.
seems like you guys,
and I started
you know,
out really complimentary. And really, I really try to make it work where it was, you know, me able to be, like, having a good combo with them and saying where, you know, where they did right, where they did wrong. And then it turned into, well, you're just one of those guys. And that's where I take offense to that. I've done this shit for almost 2 years. I've put on people who no one ever heard of before and let them fucking, you know, have an hour and a half of talking and just putting themselves over and fucking, I'm just soaking it in. And, yeah, great. I mean, it's just something I like doing as a hobby, and it's never earned me a fucking thing and anywhere near anything. It costs me every single month. So it's not something that I'm willing to have someone be like, yeah, well, you're putting yourself over. Like, really? Fucking seriously? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, well,
anyway.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, but and also sometimes, like, you know, there's only so many phrases that you can use, and there's only so many, and then there's double standards, like, I mean, I'm not calling anybody a woman, but, you know, when you talk to a woman and you say one thing and they're never receiving it the right way, it's like, dude, like, in the world, like, you know, sometimes, you know, you say one thing and just because of the way the conversation's going.
Well, I felt they came up as
way,
bitter women,
you know?
But, you know, you can phrase
well,
it
well,
that
I mean,
way.
I'm not calling them that either. But I'm just saying that sometimes when you say something, you might mean it one way and then take it another way, and then it's pushed up to be a heated conversation when it was never even intended to be that way. And it sucks that you guys had to end on that bad note because, you know, I'm cool with all you guys, you know. And
There was never an intent to put you anywhere near the middle or even involved in that shit. So don't just stop.
I know. But actually, I would have liked.
Stop with the mediation, for Christ's sakes.
I would have liked to have, you know, been there and been in the middle of it because I don't think I would have gotten into a heated argument with them. But I think I could have saved, you know, some face on both of your ends, you know, or all three of your ends, you know.
Yeah.
You know, because you know, I see it from all sides now. You know, and they see it from, they may, I don't know if they do, but they may just see it from, or they may emphasize from one side, just as you emphasize from another, from the fan side, they emphasize from the promoter side. So it's like, it sucks because, you know, you can't please everybody all the time, and, you know.
Of course not. Anyway, we left off last time. We were talking about a lot of different things, booking the CCW, different things that went on, man, the beginning of Ring of Honor, Trent's story, so many other things, and we're going to get back into some of those things because I think we kind of cut them short. But one thing I definitely want to get in on is the whole start of Pro Wrestling Unplugged, how that all came about. There was a point where, I mean, for a while I was talking to Johnny and there was...
Hello? 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 Jay? 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 Hello? Hello? Hello, 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 hello. I don't know if you can hear me or not. I'm going to call right back. I'm going to call you back because I know that you don't hear me. So I'm calling you back.
Are we back? Am I there? Jesus Christ.
There it is.
Are you there? Okay, still can't hear. I don't know what's going on. I'm going to try to fix this in 1 minute. Are you there, Nick? You there, Nick? Hey, Nick, are you on? Am I on? Who's on? I don't have no idea at this point. This is ridiculous. I'm not on. This is something else. I've never encountered this type of problem in the history of me doing this show. All right. Am I back? Can anybody hear me in the world, for Christ's sake? I have no idea what's going on right here. This is the craziest shit ever. Okay, people hear me. People do not hear Nick. If Nick can hang up and call back in, Nick, you might hear me, but I don't know what the fuck is going on. I'm going to hang up on that. Call back in, Nick. And hopefully I'll have him in, you know, man, this is fucking insane. So anyway, hope to have Nick back on soon. We'll get into this interview. We'll get to actually asking people questions that want to answer questions instead of, you know, random douchebaggery and people telling you that you're just that guy. But, this is some tomfoolery here. This is something else. I'm going to go ahead and reload this page, and I'd imagine I'll still stay on air. Why not? And, you know, fucking what's going to happen? What, am I going to go off air? That shit's happened fucking 5 times, so. All right, I think I got Nick back.
Yeah,
Nick.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Thank fucking Christ. Yes, I hear you.
All
right. Yeah, I have no idea what just happened.
I told you we should just have had them on. And then have me another day. I think this is
let's straighten this out, because if I went like several hours with them, I would have hung the phone up and I would have killed myself, because I would regret being a wrestling fan after that long on the phone with them. So it would definitely not work out. But
all right.
Did you hear my question before happened?
The last I heard was we're going to get into the start of Pro Wrestling Unplugged. And then
awesome.
John.
So, yeah, Pro Wrestling Unplugged, you know, they had the whole thing go on with them. And it was like, at first it was just, you know, Johnny started, you know, with the disgruntled type talk to me and other people. And then it became like, okay, they're starting this company and it's going to be better. It's going to be this and that. And you just thought it was another company as a fan. Next thing you know, it was clearly like a real, like, shot at CZW. A lot of trying to steal fans and steal talent and just really trying to draw over into a new thing. What was your whole perspective on the start of Pro Wrestling Unplugged?
From what I understand, the premise of Pro Wrestling Unplugged was company, you know, by the boys, for the fans, you know, like.
Yeah,
it,
I heard
know,
that
it, that's what it was supposed to be. And it turned into... and I understand why, you know, it's turned into now you have people running it, and then it's run like a business. I mean, like an indie fed or something. So
right.
Because of the fact that, I mean, you can't have everybody on the show and then everybody just picks what they want to do and everybody be happy with it. It's
Right.
Well, I mean, I wish you could, but, you know, and you know what? It's kind of, that's kind of like how it was a little bit in the beginning of CZW. So that's why Donnie figured that probably could have worked. But at this stage, at that stage of the game, with everybody, you know, it just it wasn't working. So Johnny took the reins and, you know, did whatever. So when Johnny left CZW, he got, you know, he was being stopped, booked, or stopped being booked because, you know, like he was disgruntled with things that were going on with him in CZW, and John said, you know, all right, well, we're not going to use you. And then so then he went off and did that, and then he said, well, if you're not going to use me, then, you know, Trent's coming with me. And they were tag team for a long time, and they were, you know,
getting a little choppy.
Yeah, back, you know? Yeah, they had each other's back. So it was like, so, you know, for Trent, you know, he's like, well, I can be a star anywhere, whether it's CZW or ABC wrestling, you know, or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, and that's my boy. So, you know what, for, you know, for the sake of my boy, I'm going to go and do this because, you know, we had our pact, we had our agreement. That's what we're going to do, you know. So, and that's great. And now Johnny, when that happened, Johnny accused me of being the reason why Zandig stopped using Johnny. Because the only thing I could think of as anything related to him accusing me is I said to John, listen, you have all these things that you want Johnny to do. He isn't in agreeing to do them. If you need those things to be done, I'm available. I can do them. By no means did I say get rid of Johnny. You know, I just said, well, you know, like, I'll do what needs to be done, you know, for the sake of what needs to be done. And Johnny took that as me saying, you know, I'll take Johnny's spot. You know, you don't need him anymore. You can use me. And that's not the way I went. You know, that's not what I meant. You know, I kind of meant to be like, you know, the team player. But it's just like with Johnny being upset already, he took it that way. And I don't, you know, it's not that I don't fault him for accusing me because I'm upset that he did accuse me because by him doing that, that put a rift in our friendship. And, I mean, I consider him a friend. You know, I got his back no matter what. And, you know, but at that time, it did put a little, you know, rift in our relationship and our friendship. And I didn't like that. But it is what it is. And so they went and they started putting us on Unplugged. And they did what they did. And then, you know, a lot of the people that came, that were in CZW, were in CZW because of Cashmere. Quite a bit. Like, like a whole lot of them. Like, he did a lot of the business talking. You know, whether he, I don't know. Like, I don't know if he got enough praise for what he did, but, it was definitely him.
Probably not.
You know, like, you know what? Probably not.
He did a lot for, like we said last show, that, you know, he said, you know, the Johnny and Trent had a tremendous of art, and especially Johnny, because he was, you know, the guy who was the speaker and the guy who actually played the, you know, the backstage for the most part. And, yeah, he definitely had a lot to do with a lot of people coming in. So I would say, you know, he definitely deserved more credit for it. But, I mean, I guess that's what it turned into.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, with him doing personal plug, like, he probably said, well, I got these guys this job, so now I'm going to have them over here. It's going to be fun and relaxed. There's not going to be dumb politics in this company. And, you know, I have them come and work for me. And then in the turn, okay, well, those people brought those fans to like CZW, so now those fans can come and enjoy PWU because, you know, they're the fans of these guys more so than CZW as a whole. You know, they're not fans of John Zandig's crew. They're fans of Johnny Cashmere's crew. So that's what it looks like, you know, that he was – if you think at all, you know, it would look like they're you know, he was stealing. And it looked like he was, you know, from fans to from wrestlers to the fans to the ideas and everything. But in all serious, I mean, in all aspects of it, it was almost like it was Johnny's anyway, but it was just not credited to Johnny because Johnny didn't own CZW. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's why it looked like that. And then, I mean, you know, when I stopped working for CZW, I went and worked for Johnny, and I went back and forth, and everybody was okay with it because I was friendly with both of them, and they, both sides understood that it was business, but I wasn't put into a prominent position like we were, you know, still our clique, because our clique was kind of not as tight at that point. We looked out for each other a little bit, you know?
Right.
Because during the, like, after Johnny left and saw PWU and everything, you know, like, we did go, and I, you know, made sure that we, you know, I got us all, well, I helped to get us, get them booked with me, go to WWE, so that we all had that experience, because that's something that we all want to do. We all want to have,
right,
like, you know, the WWE experience with each other. Like, that was from day one. It's like, dude, like, I, like, one gets in, we all get in, and I stayed true to it. And I'm upset that I never was able to get Barr in, but honestly, the reason why Barr wasn't in is because of something that he did with, you know, a deal with Tommy Dreamer, and because Dreamer was booking then, and I couldn't save Barr at the time to get booked through Tommy.
All right.
So, but, you know.
So, wait. So, you're telling me someone is taking blame for Barr not getting booked in the WWE?
No. I mean, dude, for all I know, Barr may have never gotten looked at by WWE. I don't know.
I'd agree with that.
But I do know that the reason why I couldn't, like, I mean, but at the same time, he could have, because there are people, you know, like, you know, that were getting booked that weren't as, because Barr, his biggest fault was that he wasn't in, you know, WWE shape, you know, body-wise.
Right.
Dude, he could work his ass off better than fucking probably most of the people that are there now, you know, let alone back then. And so if it wasn't his body holding him back, I couldn't go further and say, hey, Tommy, this guy, you know, wants to get booked. And then if Tommy remembers whatever happened, because Tommy might not even remember nor care, but it, like,
right,
there was something that happened, and, like, I couldn't risk it. I couldn't say, hey, can you book this guy? And then if Tommy did remember, it's like, no, dude, he did this. You know, like, dude, no, he's insulting me. No, I can't do it. So, but with the help of Rob and Doug, I believe Doug was still around then. Yeah, Doug was still alive then. With the help of them, you know, we got booked, you know. But once again, like, Johnny was going through his emotional state. And that's what happened with PWU. Johnny had the reins of PWU, and he wasn't emotionally stable.
Right.
And it's not because he's a nut job. Some people are wired one way, some people are wired another. Some people need help certain ways with certain things, and, you know, he wasn't getting it. And I think that some of it has to do with him and his, you know, sexuality having to hold back what he did.
That's more or less what I was going to ask next.
Go ahead.
I've always loved Johnny, and, you know, Johnny, you know, to this day, I consider him a friend, even though, you know, I've talked to him far, far less, you know, since his whole coming out party. And, you know, he did a good amount of that on my first show. He was my first guest. You know, in experience, I've always been a straight dude, but I've had, you know, a few people that I knew in the past that, you know, that I, you know, was friends with and stuff like that. Well, I mean, one particularly that I could speak of that, you know, he came out that he was gay, and it was like we were pretty much on like a regular speaking basis. Like, there was nothing held back. It was just straight up dudes. And as soon as that happened, it became this whole, like, this barrier, this, like, you wouldn't understand this whole thing. And
right.
It seemed like right around the time that Johnny was making that transition was the time that he was no-showing the hell out of, like, all of his shows. On all of his bookings, he got pulled off every card by himself. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think that contributed to that, or do you think that's the reason?
I think that if not 100%, then very, very close to it. Because you have to think about it. He didn't just become gay, you know. Like he was, you know, and he was hiding.
He was holding that shit back.
And dude, like, you have to think to prove himself to prove himself to be able to prove himself to other people,
right.
he had to have sex with girls, and people had to know about it. So he did. He had sex with a bunch of hot chicks that I couldn't nail, you know?
Didn't even want to.
You know, like, it's just like,
it's just like, yeah, he didn't want to. And so it's just like you trying to fit in, or me trying to fit into a gay community and having sex with a guy. And like you'd be like, oh man, it's socially acceptable, but I don't accept it, you know? And so he's doing that, right? So that's
like
part
if,
of it.
Like if Candy had to go.
That, but when sex,
I said like if Candy had to go, but
right. So like, you know, like so he had to like, you know, he had to do stuff like that. And then he was like, you know, keeping it hidden because, you know, we grew up we're all the same age, so we grew up in an era where it was known, it was kind of like known, but it was still talked down if, you know, you were gay, like while we were children. So it was, you know, it was okay to say, you're a fag, you know, you're gay.
Right,
it was
right.
Okay. And then, but to him, it would have been offensive, and we didn't know that. Like, I didn't know. Like, everybody else knew. Or could see that he was gay, but I really didn't know. When he came out to me, I was like, are you shitting me? Like, all these years I was defending you, and it was true. Like, and, you know,
right.
And like, so the thing is, like, he spent all these years, you know, how many years did he spend in the business before he came out? Like, so many years trying to hide that.
Right.
And that has to take an emotional toll on you, you know? So he got, anxiety, and the anxiety kept him from wanting to be around people, whether they knew he was gay or not, and all that stuff, like, it played a little, you know, trick on him. And then that's why he felt he had to back out, because he just couldn't show his face to people and be himself to people. He had a problem being comfortable around people while hiding, or after so long of hiding, you know, his identity, his true identity of who he was. And, you know, when he came out to me, the only thing that changed is, okay, now I know he doesn't like girls. Other than that,
right.
He's still Johnny Cashmere and all that. But, it made sense, like, as to why his emotional state was what it was. And then, like, it's not that I didn't fault him anymore for any of the actions that he did to, you know, let himself down, because it sucks that he had to, you know, go through that to let himself down, but also let other people down as far as fans and wrestlers and promoters, you know. And, like, I couldn't pull back the fault, but I could understand why he did what he did. And I understand that now, and I wish that he didn't have to do that just to appease me or you or any of the, you know, fans
right.
of CZW or anybody anywhere. You know, it sucks that he had to go through that, because had he not have to go and hide himself and try to be somebody else, then he might have been more comfortable and been okay with showing his face at all times. And then he could have been very, like, way more successful than he even dreamed to be. But
absolutely.
You know,
I think Johnny's really, really talented and always has been, has a great mind for wrestling. But I think, like, he went through such an emotional roller coaster that it took him out of the business. And he, you know, he went from a guy that was, you know, doing his gimmick, and he was doing his thing, and he was playing the role, and, you know, like you said, like fucking shit.
And in front of the crowd, he had to play the role that he was a ladies' man. You know what I mean? Getting girls to shove like dollar bills down his pants, and dude, like, how would you like it if you had to make
a lot of male strippers are gay for the,
right.
You know.
Yeah, but what I'm
but
saying,
still,
what I'm saying is,
and I hear you.
How would you feel if you had to, you know, have guys shove dollar bills down your pants, and you had to have guys rub on you.
Good.
You wouldn't feel good, would you? You know. And so, take that. You know, look at Johnny, and you know, it's just
no. I understand that, and it's honestly, it had to be tremendously hard for him. But I mean, it was just hard, you know, as a fan to see the dude, and as a guy who I was really talking to on a regular basis, like to see him go through this shit and really get kind of closed out, because. It was like, oh, Johnny doing his thing. And then it was like, oh, Johnny, you know, taking over the wrestling business. And then you've seen a lot of that going downwards. And it was like, oh, okay, not a lot of talk out of Johnny. And then all of a sudden it was like, all right, now he's going to be gay Mr. America. Like, he's fucking, he's got sashes and that's his new gimmick. And you're like, you didn't need to do all of that. Just be yourself. I don't care what you like on the side. You know, what you are personally in the bedroom is your fucking business. I never been in a room with you. Don't need to be.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't think that character can play too well, because there's still people who are, I guess, selfish enough to say that they don't approve of somebody being gay. So, and it's not Johnny's fault that the character won't be successful. It's because there's a majority, not a majority, but a, like maybe let's say half the fans, you know, that are going to be like disgusted by it and then turned off and say that, and be offended by it and then not want to pay their money towards whatever company he is working for. And
right.
That he, you know, so it sucks, you know, it sucks that there's people out there and you have to placate to them just because of their feelings. But, you know, on the business end of it, you know, that's why I think that the character, although if anybody can pull it off and make it good, it's, you know, Johnny's one of them. But
sure.
I don't think that it can be as successful as Johnny could make any character be, because of the fact that other people aren't accepting, and, you know, a lot of people aren't cool, you know?
Basically. Right.
Now, so,
through the course of that, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, you know, with the whole anxiety thing, like, the anxiety thing pulled them off from, you know, being able to actually have a match on WWE when we were all there. And that sucks, because he was booked for a match in WWE, him and Trent, in a dark match. And, you know, it was getting close to showtime, and he was getting anxiety, and he threw up, and he was pale white, and could barely stand, and, you know, he was
wow.
going through it. And it was just like, dude, like, you know, if assholes in this world weren't so much of assholes to not accept people, like, you know, people for their sexuality, for who they are, you know, then Johnny wouldn't have gone through that. And what Johnny worked so hard to accomplish, Johnny would have been able to take another step in towards what he was trying to accomplish. And I think it's because of other people in this world being so much of an asshole, you know?
And, yeah, I hear that. But, I mean, it is a lot of America, and it's just part of, like, what you're going to deal with is, you know, yeah, I mean, you take that choice, you live that life, and you'll get your good amount of people that just accept you for the dude you always were, no matter what your choice is, and then there's going to be fucking people who don't like it. I mean, there's people like that from all aspects, and, I mean, you just got to, it sucks, but you got to, like, kind of separate yourself from the people who don't like you, and you might increase that by some of the choices you make, but. Why not,
but, like,
man?
But, like, the thing is, like, as far as, like, choices go, like, being gay, I don't believe is a choice. Being gay is, you know,
nah, I mean,
you know, like, it's something that like, you know, it's a feeling that you can't help. And so, like, he didn't choose to be gay. He chose to hide it, yes. But
right.
The reason why he hid it was because other people chose to not accept it. You can choose to not accept it, but you can't choose to be straight or gay. It's how you are. So it's the other people, you know, honestly, who, like, ruined it. But it's like, but you, like, exactly like you said before, like, you have to understand, you know, that there's people who are going to accept anybody, you know, there's people who are going to accept things and people who aren't. But, you know, it was Johnny just had a tough time of figuring out how to handle himself with the situation at hand. And it took him a while to do it, and, you know, and so that's why, you know, like, you know, and so, like, that, my point of that part was just, you know, it sucks that he had to lose out on an opportunity that was a great opportunity that could have been a door opening opportunity for him had he not been, you know, having the anxiety problem that was caused by, you know, all the other stuff that I was talking about. So,
right.
I'll just reiterate.
So, I mean, one of the things that, you know, I got to say as far as that whole thing went is there was obviously a huge friendship or whatever you want to call it, but then turned into a pretty negative thing in Devin Moore, who was pretty much created through Pro Wrestling Unplugged, and, you know, then it turned into a heat thing, and at one point there was going to be a boxing match and all this different stuff that went on. If you have any insight to what that relationship actually, where that went wrong, or
I I don't know everything. You might even know more than I do with how everything went with them. I do know that they, you know, that they fought, and I do know, you know, or argued, and I do know that, you know, there's going to be, like, you know, a real.
I've just heard that
fight.
I put myself over, so I know lots now.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, I didn't have too much hands-on knowledge. Like, I know that, you know, Johnny put a lot of stock into Devin. I know that Devin, you know, really got noticed. You know, he was wrestling for a while, different spots, but he really did get noticed in Pro Wrestling Unplugged. Johnny, and honestly, if you look at Devin, you look at Johnny, like, they could have passed as brothers, you know? So Johnny may have seen a lot of himself in Devin, but then Devin had the charisma and the know-how in the ring like Trent. So it was really, really odd that, you know, Devin was the combination of Johnny and Trent, and Johnny, you know, like, we all lack something in ourselves, you know, so, you know, and we all have great features. So what Johnny was lacking in the ring, Trent had, and Devin had both of their stuff, basically. So that's the way, that's why Johnny, I could imagine, that's why Johnny tried to push him to the moon, because he's like, dude, this is the combination, this is him. And then, between, like, you know, with Johnny being Johnny, getting into an argument with, you know, with Devin, you know, it happened, and, you know, Devin stood his ground, Johnny stood his ground, no matter, I don't even know what they argued about, but they did. And then, next thing I know, that it, like, I didn't think it was, like, that big of a deal, but then I saw that they were, like, you know, there's, like, big fights between everybody, between them, and everybody knew about it, and people were telling me about it, and I'm like, wow, I didn't know that was that heat. I thought it was more of an angle than it was a legit, you know, personal argument and personal heat. And then it got to the point where John was like, dude, I'll fight him. I don't care if it's in front of people or not in front of people. And Devin was like, I don't give a fuck about it. I don't want to. I just want to try and do my thing. If Johnny wants to fight me, then when I see him and he wants to offer me the fight, then I'll fight.
He probably sounded a little more like, I don't fucking give a fuck, cuz. Whatever. He wants to fucking fight me. Let's fucking do it. I don't give a shit.
That's another thing about Devin. Like, dude, his voice was like a kid's voice when I first met him. And then there was like a long period of time where I didn't see him, maybe like a year or two. And then all of a sudden, he had this voice, like, you know, almost like a smoker, like he was holding in a cigarette drag while he was talking. And
right.
I don't know where that came from. Like, all of a sudden that voice came.
Pretty substantial. I love it.
And he didn't have that voice when I first met him. So when he all of a sudden got, I was like, oh, I must have had a cold. And then like 3 months later, he still has that voice. I'm like, oh, wow. But yeah, you were dead on with that. You were an awesome impressionist. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, he's one of the few voices that I could do, and I could nail it. I've called people and just started that shit up as far as wrestlers, and they're like, oh, fuck you.
Dude, that's
but,
perfect. That was perfect.
Yeah. Especially after his shoot, he's like, fucking Homicide said you're an asshole, cuz. I'm like, oh, shit, dude, that sucks.
As far as their fight, like, I really don't know too much about it, so I really can't comment. I just can tell you, like, you know, through hanging out with everybody that's intertwined with the group, you know, like, I heard bits and pieces, then all of a sudden, it was like, you know, and you know what? If the fans knew that it was a legit fight and then, you know, legit heat, they probably could have made some money off of it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't see why not, you know? And because nowadays,
sure,
you know, the more real stuff, I guess, like, the fans are interested in, because, you know, the fake stuff they can foresee, but real stuff, they want to see people really kick ass. So it's
right.
Good money. And I think, that's an aspect that Johnny was going for, too, when he was saying, let's fight in front of people, you know, because it's money, you know? So, like, I think that's where he was going with that, you know.
Right.
At that,
An angle that, you know, you did that I was really, you know, actually pretty excited about, well, kind of bittersweet depending, you know, on what sides of it I look at, but it was a pretty big, as far as at least the research, CZW. Well, Hollywood, what was the whole start of that?
Wait, hold on one second. Are you there? Because you're going in and out on me now. Are you there? I know it's not my phone because I got full bars. Hello?
Oh, man, we were going so good. Doing so good. Hello? I'm calling right back.
Okay, well, I'm back. For the fucking third time tonight, I got cut off, and I'm going to send a very ridiculous fucking email to Blog Talk Radio to figure out what is going on, and I personally have no fucking idea. So, Nick, if you're there, please call back in. For Christ's sakes, this fucking Blog Talk, it's ridiculous. I have no idea what's happening. I need dude to call back in. He's calling me on the other line, and I can't take that. That's crazy because I'm on the air. Actually, hold on. Let me try it. Burke. All right. Am I still on? Anybody give me feedback if I'm still on the air? Because I have no idea what is going on tonight. This is fucking mayhem. I got fucking ambushed by fucking two people. Am I on? You hear me now? You mother... So, yeah. I'm still on. Nikki, call back in. Jesus Christ. This is the fucking weirdest show I've ever done. And I said from the start, it's either going to be fucking gold or it's going to be an abortion. I don't know. We might have lost the baby tonight. Either way, we're doing this. Okay, Nick.
Yes,
you back?
You can you hear me?
Yes. For
right.
Christ's
now,
sake.
Just for future reference, try to keep your cell phone on hand. I'll text you or call you if by chance this happens again, and then we'll stay in touch via text.
The problem is when I call back in, like I'm on my phone. So I don't even know how to like text and call at the same time. I mean, we're talking some multitasking. I haven't learned yet. I don't know none of that.
Right.
But
okay.
I mean, I got my Facebook open if you want to hit me on there. But either way, I don't know what's going on tonight. It's ridiculous. But back to what
right.
I was saying. The Hollywood Necro angle
okay.
that you know got you back involved in CZW, and I thought it was tremendous. And What was your thoughts on it? Or how did it get started?
Man, that was a $1 million shot with a $1 million drive with a nickel shot. It was when Necro came to me and said, that's what I want to do, and I need, you know, somebody to be my agent, and, you know, I want you to be it. I was like, that's great. And he told me the ideas, and it's awesome. I was like, you know what? I have so many ideas just as soon as you're telling me this. So many ideas we could do it. And I told him, okay. So then we went and talked to John and the other, I forget who else was booking, might have been Mike Burns. Anyway, I talked to him, and I said, all right, I got, you know, oh, I think it was like Maven was helping out. I think Burns was out. But anyway,
right.
I told him, you know, I have ideas. I was like, you know, it has to be done right, and it has to be done right in a certain way to keep him strong and to keep the whole entire idea and the theory of what you want to do okay. And see, the problem was that you had Necro as a hardcore wrestler, and then,
right.
you know, really big old hardcore wrestler, and then he was, you know, turning into somebody who doesn't need to do that, because now he's an actor, so he doesn't. So
right.
like, there are certain things, you know, like that he was booked to do, and he had no, like CCW just didn't. They didn't see it. They're like they seen the end, they seen the beginning, but they didn't see the middle. They didn't see how you had to keep it interesting, and they want to keep on putting him out there. But if you keep on putting him out there, and he did that crap, then the fans get bored and they hate it and it's not over and it doesn't work
sure.
right. And they had to put other people in. They had like they should have had Necro not wrestle like most of the time. Maybe he should have had one match in between the beginning
and the blow-off match, and then all the other stuff should have been screw him over Danny Havoc. And it should, and
right.
to do that, you had, like, that's why I had the whole group with us, so that each and every one of us, you know, I think there was, like, what, like, five of us in the group or whatever, and
yes.
Each and every one of us could have taken a part of almost of like at least one or two matches to be able to take the place of Necro, so that he didn't have to wrestle and he didn't have to do anything. And then, you know, we get over, and you know we do the job, and you know, whether we win or lose, like, we could have figured that all out to make it make sense. And then, you know, Necro still, like, the fans will still want to see Necro versus Danny Havoc. You know, they will still want to see that at what, Cage of Death, I think it was, supposed to top off at. So
right,
and
it
started very close to right after Cage of Death, if not at, like, I forget when it started, but anyway, it was supposed to be a long program, and CZW doesn't know how to run a long program, because CZW's idea of working was giving them everything right then and there, and you couldn't with this, because it had to end at a very big show. And it could have and should have, but it didn't, because CZW didn't know how to book it. And they didn't have faith in me, because I was just like Punk says, I'm a Paul Heyman guy, I was a WWE guy. Like, not that I came from WWE,
right.
but that's the way I thought, you know. But for this angle, that's the way you had to think. That's the fucked up part. You had to book it that way. You had to not give the fans what they wanted for a long time, until the very end, because at the very end, that payoff would have been, that match would have been, they would have had to really do anything, and it would have been great. But John
fucking
and
Ian
and,
got
and,
the payoff on that match. Fucking, they lost the booking, they lost everything. Ian ended up getting the payoff and just did it fucking, I think it was like round one of King of the Death match or something like that. And
yeah.
the fans were ballistic, because CZW built that shit for all that time, and then Ian ate up the payoff.
Right. So, so, like, what happened was, like Necro was, like as it went on, like, you know, a few shows into it, Necro was like, this sucks. Like, they're, you know, Necro, they had me doing too much. And their idea was, we're paying for Necro to come in, we're paying for his flight, and we're paying him his fee, so we want to get the most out of him. And it's like, well, you know, just keep him at home. You know, I can carry the angle if you don't want to pay him. You know, because the big thing is that it's the payoff at the end. You know, and so, you know, my like, Necro just got mad, and he was like, dude, they're not doing it right. They ruined it, and they did. CZW dropped the ball, and they ruined it. It wasn't Necro. It wasn't me. It wasn't Danny. It wasn't anybody in our group. It was, I don't know if it was John Zandig or Maven or whoever was, you know, the booker and everything. It was them. You know, they were the ones who ruined it, because they couldn't see it from a different angle, and that's a big problem with CZW then. That's a big problem with CZW now. You know, the people ahead can't see it from a different side, and you know, and because of that, then they're not seeing the grand picture, and they think they know, but they don't know. And it was obvious right there. And Necro was like, you know what? Now it looks stupid. I don't even want to do it. It's not going to mean anything. So now I'm done. You know, and can you fault the guy for that? Because it was a $1 million idea, and.
Right.
You know, it just got ruined in CZW fashion, you know. And
what was your thoughts of the part of that, you know, where you had TOD involvement with, you know, the fake Randy the Ram character, the Mickey Rourke clone, and came out with the tennis racket? And I actually think that was – I brought a couple weapons, and I think that was actually a tennis racket that I brought. But
all right, well, what that idea was – Well, number one, I was wearing that agent outfit, you know, and it was outside and it was hot, and I was like, there's no way that I am going to wear this out of here during this. Number one, I'll get blood all over it, and I don't think I'll be able to find this sweet 1970s jacket anywhere else, so I'm not wearing it. And, you know, I got to find something else. Like, how can I be offensive and everything? I went to, a thrift store, like a Salvation Army or whatever, and I'm looking, and I see, like, you know, these shorts, and I think they were women's shorts, but they're in the men's section. And I was like, and I see the sweater very close to it.
I'm like, all right, I'll get this and this. And I was like, it looks like a, it looks like a tennis player. So I got it and I bought it. And then lo and behold, like actually, I was gonna wear it with just a like a cowboy hat or something, like a beach hat or something, like a straw beach hat.
Yeah.
And then just and not have anything. And then lo and behold, there was the tennis racket, and that's perfect. And
that was all me. I got to tell you, it's all me.
You made it. And so
I pulled
like,
two of them out of a fucking out of my shed that I was like, I've never played tennis. Why are these in my shed? Let's bring that too. Fuck it.
So you know.
Well,
yeah, and like I didn't know. So that's why I had the outfit, and then you know I wore it there for you know that reason, and yeah, I mean I wore the outfit just because I didn't feel like being hot, and I wanted to be offensive. So I had that, and I thought that would be great because if you're an agent, you know, like you know what do? They golf, and they play tennis. They do those types of things. So you know, now that I'm an agent, I live the luxury life and I can play tennis. Now, I wish I had, like, tennis balls to put in the pockets because, you know, like back in the, you know, back in the 80s and stuff, you know, the tennis players, they would have their tight shorts like that with the tennis balls in them and it just looked like ridiculous. Not to have them in there as, like, you know, my nuts and my testicles or nothing, but, like, you put them in the pockets because, you know, when you're playing tennis, that's where they put the extra balls at, in their pockets. So I thought that would have been funny, but I couldn't find tennis balls, you know, at the moment. So, anyway, we went in, and then, you know, they booked it. They had the fake Randy the Ram there. And this is perfect. All right, great. We can do it. Let's talk.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, let's talk. And I'm like, what's going on? So they told me what it was. Like, I forget what was going on. And I was like, it's not going to make sense. No, it can't be done that way. I'm like, well, this is what we want. This is the way it's got to be done. And so I couldn't, I don't know why, like, they couldn't listen to me. Like, they never could. They could never listen to me. And there's so many things, like ideas, you know, that, you know, could have went one way, but they weren't their way, and it came to shit. And it wasn't my fault that it came to shit, because, like, whatever the way they thought, it must have been, like, you know, like a fan's point of view, and I didn't see things from a fan's point of view. So, like, you know, I didn't agree with it. So it didn't come off right, because, like, we couldn't even talk about it, because I didn't understand what they wanted to do. So I couldn't even get the ideas over. And then, so they went and did it, and I know that was kind of awful. And I knew that the fake Randy the Ram couldn't wrestle so that the fans would like it, you know. So I think I had it like it was going to be like Randy the Ram wasn't even going to be coming out for, you know, quite a while. It was going to be like the Darren Aronofsky guy, and then like I had like two.
Right.
The big Samoan dude Bruce, like whatever his wrestling name was, you know, then Colorware Assassin I think was with me, and maybe there could have been
yeah.
another person. So I wanted it all to be.
I gotta follow with that soon. Go ahead.
I wanted it to be like each person gets in and does something, so it's a good 5 to 7 minutes worth of time, and we all fail on fighting. Was it against Danny Havoc? Who was it against? Who was the opponent for Randy the Ram?
I think it was Danny Havoc.
I'm pretty sure it was Danny too. That's how much I forget about it and didn't care, because it didn't matter who was in that part. The part wasn't to get anybody else over other than Necro, and you know, like it was our group to try and get Necro over. So, but it was using the thing, and it was the spearhead to help also Danny in the long run. But it was to,
right.
to kind of try and show that we were trying to do basically what I want to do is like a tournament death. I want to take the whole entire idea that I had and then have it like pretty much as a mini version of the like you know just during that match have it be like you know the 6 month mini version of it you know
right.
the mini version of the 6 months that I was planning so anyway I wanted to be each and every one of us at the time, and that's another reason why I had white, because I had white on so that I was planning on, and I never do this, I was planning on gigging, you know, so and bleeding. And I wanted white to get all, you know, the blood to get all over the white. So that was another reason why I was wearing that. And but it was like, no, we're gonna have Randy the Ram come out with you. And I'm like,
No, it's going to ruin it. Like from the very beginning, he's not going to show them what it is. You know, he's not going. The fans aren't going to be happy if he's out there for 10 minutes. So you show each and every one of us, because I'm going to suck at a hardcore thing, and I don't know if any of these guys are any good at hardcore stuff, but here we'll go in and we'll make Danny Havoc look good. We'll all take something big from Danny Havoc. And then our big, big guy, the guy who's going to save us, is the actor, you know? And so the actor comes out, and then he fails and then loses. And there you have your 10 to 15-minute match. Danny Havoc does all these hardcore stuff. The fans see everybody get beat up. The fans see everybody get bloodied. The fans get what they want. And, you know, the anger continues, and Necro is still... you know, held up high. And, you know, Necro didn't have to touch the match at all, you know. He just stood up there and he sent everybody in there as his minions, and there you go. That was my idea. But that got shit on, by the CZW officials, you know, to go and do what they did. And, you know, just along with the whole rest of the angle, it was horrible. The only good part was, I think, me looking like an idiot with the tennis outfit. And then I don't know if – I'm pretty sure – I know it made it to YouTube. On the DVD, I got my hand cut, and boy, was I making a big deal out of it. And the paper cut, you know. And I thought it was hilarious what I was doing. I was going nuts with it. And, like, as a character should have been. And not to put myself over, but, you know, it was great. And, like, if I was able to – do that right then. That I could have done that whole entire thing, not only with like that same type of idea during the match, but I could have done it the whole entire angle. And basically, if you look at that little part where I cut myself and I'm yelling to the EMTs, that's the way that the whole entire thing should have went. You take that small example and grow that, you know, and take that idea and that small 3-minute thing. Is what the whole entire 6 months should have been leading up to Cage of Death for Danny Havoc and Necro Butcher. You know, that was a small game.
Now, if you think they shortened that feud and then capped it off at Tournament of Death, do you think it would have worked?
It could have. To be the main event of Tournament of Death, if they made that the main event, the finals of Tournament of Death, it definitely could have. They said, if when I told them it has to go like this and they say, no, it's too long, and then, you know, they were okay with it capping off at Tournament of Death, and then they go through and you know, the whole card, you know, ends up, you know, the way it shifts is that, you know, Danny Havoc versus them, and that's the payoff, and it could have, definitely. Definitely another way. That's an awesome idea that, you know, they didn't take into consideration. And you know what? I'm not saying I did, you know, say that, you know, that was an option. But, if, you know, somebody might have brought that up and said, hey, why don't we cap it off at Tournament Death? And then, you know, of course, obviously, definitely did get shot down if it was proposed because, it didn't happen. So,
right.
You know, like that. That's the thing. Like, okay, like I think it started what, like 2 or 3 months before Tournament of Death, like the angle. So we've already
like that.
You know, if there was 3 shows before Tournament of Death, then yeah, it definitely could have. You know.
That was always my thing in retrospect. It was like, yeah, I'm good with it and everything, but, like, once you see Necro at Tournament of Death and, well, he's not there for death matches. Like, wow, he's one of the strongest death match wrestlers in the business. If we don't bring it out of him at this show, like, fuck, why is he here? And like you said, like, you hold him back, you don't have him wrestle, you have, you know, you come out and say, you know, hey, my client has been booked for bigger and better things, and you're not going to see him, but you're going to see, and then you put the Randy the Ram clone in there, and yeah, why not?
Yeah, see,
but to have him actually there and be like, oh, I'm going to lock up with somebody, like, oh, no, we're not doing that.
you see what see the way I would have booked Tournament of Death if that okay if it was if it went to Tournament of Death was the blow off right and
right.
Yeah, Tournament of Death was the blow off of the whole feud and you know like Necro was going to wrestle against Dean Havoc in the finals now
right.
Let me just let you know that okay the way that was supposed to be was the whole angle was he shied away the whole entire time. From fighting hardcore, and then when it was finally the blow off match between Necro and Danny, he was forced to and had no other option but to go back to being Necro Butcher that we all know and love. And then he turns on us, and then he fights, but still like you know fights, and then you get the winner because it doesn't matter now. Like at that point, it didn't matter if there was you know a heel or a face. It
right.
didn't matter, you know, as long as Necro was back to Necro. And it didn't matter who really won, as long as, like I said, Necro was back to Necro. And the very end of the whole entire thing was supposed to, the blow-off was supposed to be them two versus each other and also Necro turning on us going back to hardcore. So I forgot to explain that. That was the way that the ending of the whole entire thing was supposed to be.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like the fans were supposed to hate him, and be so mad at him. And then when he finally turned around, they were going to love it. And so, anyway, the way I would have booked Tournament of Death is that the whole premise of our group was that each that you know we were going to take Necro's spot. Like one of us was going to take Necro's spot during the thing. However, we had it planned that we were not going to. Go past, we're not going to make it so that Necro and Danny could wrestle. So the way I would have booked it was that we accidentally win or somehow by fluke win all of the tournament matches to get Necro and, you know, and Necro's would be the last one and have to wrestle because there would have been no other option. We all would have been hurt, so none of us could
right.
take his place. So he would have had to wrestle because we accidentally by fluke got into the finals, and he was the only one left, and he had to. And
right.
then that's the way I would have booked it. And, you know, but they you know, of course, none of it, you know, would have had. And actually, that's the way the whole entire feud was supposed to go. We were all supposed to take the turns, and then we were all supposed to, like, come out. Like, suppose it was, like, Cage of Death, I'm sorry. And, you know, it was booked and billed as Necro Butcher versus Danny. It has to happen in the cage. And then, you know, in the very beginning of it, you know, we cut a promo, and somehow everybody comes up and, like, beats us up or they chain us all together or something, and there's no way that any of us can compete. And the only person that can compete at that point would have been Necro, and Necro was forced to do it, and then he
right.
turns on Necro. I mean, he turns back to old Necro that we know and love, and then also turns on us, you know, and it goes ahead and fights the hardcore and does every
right.
in the book that, you know. And that's the way it was supposed to be. And that's, I think that would have been awesome, you know. So,
yeah.
But, you know.
One thing that I thought that really, really got the whole gimmick over, too, was those fucking videos. How did those all come about?
Well, it was supposed to be, like, really short videos. And I said to, who's doing it? What's his name? What's it? He's going to be mad at me that his name is just not in my mouth. What's his name? Dude with the long black hair and he was a
Billy Graham.
Fiction. Billy Graham. Yes. And
okay.
I didn't forget his name because it's not important. I just get brain farts a lot. So anyway,
right.
So I said he was good with, like, you know, the video stuff. I said, hey, can you do a video where it starts off with give us an interest video, and it starts off with, you know, the, with, like, the growling and, like the way, like, the, you know, like, century 20th Century Fox and all that. You know,
right,
you know, I wanted to start off with that, and then maybe just, like,
yeah.
Make some sort of videos, like, of actors and, you know, try to impose in pictures, try to impose, you know, Necro hanging out with different famous actors. You know, just take
right.
it and, you know, go to Photoshop and put the pictures in. And then he went and he took it a different route. And, you know, I was like, it wasn't what I wanted, but it was still awesome. And I'm watching it, and it was great. And I'm, like, thinking, this would be pretty good heat, you know. Let's play it when we come out.
And then it's playing. I'm just watching it. And I'm not even going out. I was like, wait, I want to wait till a certain part. And then I see how the fans are reacting and how it's like, it's cool, but then it's like the fans are like shit, like kind of getting mad a little bit. And I'm like, all right, no, let's wait. We wait and wait. And then I saw them getting so mad. And then so finally it was over. I was like, now we go. And we go out, and it was such like a, like the first time it was like a mixed reaction, but then as it went on, it got more heated, more hated. You know, like we were more hated by the fans, but it was still like over hated, which I kind of wasn't happy about, but I could tell that we were still, you know, was hated. So, you know, it got to the point where John Zandig was mad. He's like, dude, what the hell's going on? I'm like, what, you're mad? He goes, yeah. I was like, why? He goes, you're taking so long. I was like, oh, the fans feel the same way. We're heels. We're supposed to be that way. And like, it didn't happen on purpose. It just kind of happened because, you know, Billy Graham got carried away and did another great piece of work. Like, he, you know, it wasn't what I wanted, but it was still a great piece of work, and it ended up going a different way. I thought it was just awesome, you know, and so then that's why it happened. It really happened because I just liked the video so much I wanted to watch it. And cool. And then, like, I noticed that the fans were kind of getting a little on edge, you know, and, like, they wanted to see action and not the video. And I was like, all right, now, okay, that's the way he'll work. So we wait. And I build that kind of similar to watching The Undertaker back, you know, before The Undertaker, when they were able to do independent shows, they did like a show for Asa. It was Kane versus Undertaker or something like that. Kane and Undertaker, I forget what exactly what it was, but Undertaker's music was playing, and he was just sitting there waiting and waiting until the crowd did a certain pop. Like, he knew it, you know? And so I took I learned from him that, you know, not to say Undertaker taught me it, but, you know,
right,
studying him, you know, like that day that the show was, I assumed that, you know, you wait until there's a certain pop that you're waiting for, and then that's when you go. And I was waiting, and I saw that the pop, not the pop, but the reaction was building a certain way, and then so, like, there was just a last second decision for me to hold up and wait, and I didn't give a fuck what anybody else said. I don't care how much John was yelling at me to go out there. We weren't going until I felt that the crowd was at a point that I needed them to be. And I think that worked. Do you feel that it worked? Or do you think that it worked?
Nah, I definitely thought it worked.
Okay. I mean, don't say that. Just
I thought the whole thing worked.
Me. Like, if you don't feel it worked, please tell me. But like, the way I feel that it worked, but...
I thought those videos, the long suspense, and people even, like, looking and shaking their head. The same way that I used to, you know, when Trent, as much of a friend and fan and all of that, you know, he would circle the ring 8 times and fucking just not even pay attention to how fucking annoyed the fans were that the match wasn't starting yet. Then he'd get in the ring, he'd start to let the ref check him, then he'd fucking get out of the ring and, you know, circle the ring another 2-3 times. The stalling sometimes as a heel works very well to build.
Yeah, because you see, you have to do that because if you're over with the crowd and the crowd likes you and you have to turn them some way and you have to figure out how that way is. And, you know, like, that's the way Trent chose to do it and that's the way I chose to do it. And, you know, it worked because there's people out there that are supposed to be heels. And they'll come out there, and the crowd will react, and then they'll eat it up, and they'll like it. And it's like, that's not the way
right.
It's supposed to be. You know, you're supposed to have the fans hate you. And it doesn't matter if they like you, you know, during the match. Not say it doesn't matter, but it doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter if they're popping for you. You have to get them to turn to hate you. You have to get them to pop for the other guy more. You know what I mean? And so that's what
yeah.
I did when he would go and circle around. He I'm sure, like, you know, he saw that, you know, it annoys people. It definitely annoyed the guys. The guys got mad because, you know, they'd throw, like, change and the girls would get the dollars. So the guys would throw pennies and nickels and dimes or whatever, you know, at them. And then so, like, they noticed that, like, you know, the girls liked it. So it's like, all right, we'll go, we'll placate to the girls, and then we'll irritate, you know, the fans enough to get them to hit us, and
yeah.
We didn't. And then, you know, and Johnny got to bring out Johnny pulled out an umbrella to reflect all the change being thrown. That was funny. I like that.
Yeah.
So like, you know, like, that's something that, like, a lot of wrestlers these days don't understand. They don't know, and I don't know if they're being taught or not, but just they, that's part of what they don't get, you know, and they have to do it. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's what makes
sense. Yeah,
life,
I understand,
you know?
It, Bill, for sure. Well, speaking of Trent, figure I want to get some more Trent stories out of you. You had asked me to remind you about the story that the first time you went looking for the CCW school and ended up at a nightclub.
Okay. I can tell you. Also, I have something I'm doing next month in July 11th. Before I get to that, I can either tell it now or I can tell it later. I'm going to go see a psychic and a psychic medium. And it's one that
okay.
Trent's mom goes to, and I want to talk about that. So at the end of the story,
sure.
The stories, we'll talk about that because I have some ideas and maybe give me some input, and other people can give me input on what to do.
Okay.
So all right. So anyway, more comedy jokes. All right. Going to CCW school is me, Trent, Johnny, Billy Real, and we were and my cousin Phil. He wrestled a little bit, and he wrestled for the girls' company, like the Glow or whatever, and he was also known as Davey May, and in Jersey All-Pro, he was known as Mark Real. So I don't know if you know him, or if any of the listeners know of him, but it was me, Trent, Billy, Johnny, and Phil. And they knew the area that the first CCW school was in, and it was over by Adelphia's in South Jersey, in like over near Deptford, but we were going over there like around like let's say 9 o'clock-ish we were going to go, and we were first at the GWA gym that was ran by the Pitbulls, and I was chewing tobacco, and I swallowed some, and then we decided I'm going to throw up, I'm just waiting for it to happen, but it's like they're like, dude, we got to go, we're not going to make it. I'm like, all right, I got to throw up. I couldn't make myself throw the fuck up. So we go and we took my car, and I was like, I can't drive because I feel like shit. I know I'm going to throw up soon, so I don't want to throw up while I'm driving. So Johnny, you drive. And he's like, all right. And then so I go to, you know, I'm feeling sick, and I'm sitting in the front seat. And then Billy's like, no, I'm sitting in the front seat. And if I wasn't feeling sick, I would have followed him and said, fuck you, I'm sitting in the front seat, but I just said, fuck it, just go. You know, like, get in and go, because I'm not going to argue with you. You know, it bothered me so much. So Billy's sitting in the front seat. Next to me is Trent. And next to him, behind the driver's side, who's Johnny driving, is Phil. And I had a soda from Nifty 50s. Because the GWA gym was right down the street from the 50s, and had ice in it, and I was done drinking it, and I was, you know, Trent wanted the ice, so I gave him a cup with the ice in it, and we're driving, and I start feeling sick, and Trent has the cup of ice, and you know he's almost done the ice, but there's that one piece of ice just hanging out, but you can't get out. You know, you have to tap on it, and it's not coming out.
Yeah.
You have to tap it, you know, and then it hurts your face when you're tapping on it. And so he's trying to get it out. I'm about to throw. I have my hand over my mouth. My cheeks are puffed out, and I'm trying, and Trent's getting it out, and I couldn't hold it no more, and I threw up all over the back of Billy Real. And, you know, served him right, you know, for one to seven. And he's like, oh, he's all mad at me. You know, I'm like, dude, I told you I was in the front. If I could have, I would have put down, if I was in the front, I would put down the window and thrown up out the window, you know? So, fuck you, Billy. you caught my throw up. And so, so we go to go to the, so now we're still going. We're looking over for the thing, and like, of course, like, you know, nobody has like a real legit address. They just know the area. They have a foggy memory of where it is, and we couldn't find it at all. And we didn't. We never even end up going there. But we're over in South Jersey, near Deptford, New Jersey, and that's where Adelphia's is. And Dennis Caruso was still alive then. And Billy was like, "Oh, Dennis Caruso hangs out at Adelphia's. Let's go and see if Dennis is there, and we'll go and hang out with him." All right, cool. So we all go, and you know. Like, we're not dressed like bums, so, you know, we can, you know, get in. And like we're there like around 9 o'clock ish, and they're still serving food. So we eat some food, and we're still seeing that Dennis is going to show up. And it turned into a nightclub after like 10:30 or something. And
right.
At that point, like, you know, you have to have ID, and you have to, you know, it's a nightclub. So me, Trent, Billy, me, Johnny, and Billy, and Phil have ID. However, Trent doesn't have ID because he just
right.
He had a driver's license, I believe, at the time. He just didn't carry an ID with him because he's Trent. So he's like, all right, well, I can't stay here. So, of course, Billy wants to stay to see if Carluzzo shows up. And I'm like, all right, you know what? People are going to show up. Girls are going to show up. We'll hang out. And so we stay, and Trent and Phil went out to wait for, like, you know, a couple hours. And, of course, they go and they burn one, you know, they burn some weed. And can't do it out in the open, so you have to find some place to go and do it. So they go to the woods. And they're out in the woods, and, like, you know, we're there for a couple hours, and we go out, and, you know, we can't find them. And finally we see them walking out of the woods. And it's like, what are you guys doing in the woods? Oh, we're getting high, and they're all stoned out of mind. And then, like, you know, they're standing there, and Trent's, like, scratching his arm, and Phil's scratching his leg, and then Trent starts scratching his head, and scratching his leg, and scratching they're all, like, scratching their face, like, both of them they're scratching to hell, all stoned, and, like, what the hell? Dude, they got, like, poison ivy on their whole bodies, you know, from, like, I guess, dude, like, knowing Trent, he'll just sit down and lay down anywhere, you know, and roll himself and roll over anything, you know, just because, you know, he'll just do it. And I'm sure that, you know, my cousin Phil just popped a squat and sat down and, you know, hung out and did the same thing. And, like, so they got poison ivy or poison oak or whatever from going out and doing their bad vice of smoking the marijuana when we went to go see the CZW school. So that's the story for that.
That's crazy. I mean, you wanted me to, you know, remind you about the psychic thing. What's going on with that?
But is there another story too?
Oh, yeah. The other story.
Oh, when he had his first match, with WWE? Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That and, the evolution of giving a shit during a story.
Okay. All right. All right, the evolution of giving a shit during the story. I'll tell that one first, and then I'll tell the other one.
Okay.
I we had a thing where it was like, people would be telling a story, and we wouldn't give a fuck about the story. And, like, it became to a realization, like a lot of people do this, they don't care. But they sit there and they placate to them, and they say, you know, whatever they want to hear. But we came out with a thing, and it started off with, like, we're driving somewhere, and an older black guy, you know, like looking sharp, like with a hat on, you know, and, you know, dresses well, but, you know, he's an older black gentleman, you know, to say that he's gray hair and a gray mustache, and his hubcap rolls off, and, you know, just like, and Trent just thought it was hilarious when he looked over and saw him just shaking his head and bang. And that's all you just knew that he said, damn, you know? And so, like, you know, the Trent was just, like, laughing, and just, it would just pop him so much. He was just laughing about this, like, for, like, weeks.
Yeah.
And then, like, we were talking about the evolution of, you know, a story being told where you just don't give a fuck, and you have to sit there and pick it for this. So when somebody's telling a story, like, dude, like, we adapted to this to so many people, so many times, and we did it, and, like, we knew that we were doing it, but, like, we're the only ones who knew this. Like, I started telling people just recently about the evolution of giving a shit during the story. And you know, somebody's telling a story, the first thing is, you know, you do the whole, you know, like, they shoot, like, either shoot or shoo, you know, like, shoo.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they go in, they continue with the story, and then, damn. And then they go on some more, and then, that's fucked up. And then, after that, they still got more, it's, whew, damn, that's fucked up. And so, dude, like, we used to do that all the time to everybody. Everybody used to think that it was like we were caring and giving a shit. We played it off so well that it seemed like it was so concerning and so genuine that we just really cared, and we just never gave two fucks about nothing. And then every once in a while, we would catch ourselves doing it to each other and then, like, you know, yell at each other for doing it. And it's like, one of the last times, he was telling me a real heartfelt thing, and it came out. Like, I didn't even mean to, like, dick him over, and I didn't mean, I wasn't trying to be a dick. It's just, that was my reaction. I was like, damn, that's fucked up, you know? And, like, he was all fucking mad at me, he told me his whole heartfelt thing, and I really did care. I gave advice and everything. But then I did the whole, shoot, damn, that's fucked up, and I was sincere about it. And he was all mad, you know, like, you know, because he went heart to heart.
I'm sure you just got used to using it. Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, you know, it was fun, you know. So, feel, you know, everybody can feel free to use the Trent and Nick Burke fake give a shit during somebody's tour. So, and if I catch you doing it while we're talking during this interview, I will send a nasty letter to Blog Talk Radio.
Go ahead, because I got a lot of nasty letters to send as well after getting cut off three times tonight. So, yeah. Damn,
then,
that's fucked up.
And so, then we have his first match with WWE. Other than not the thing with the Dudleys, but you know, actually the one where Johnny, you know, I was talking about earlier on when Johnny had gotten sick and couldn't. It was so it was Trent and teaming up with Bison from New York, a wrestler from New York, you know, they just didn't look like a tag team. They're obviously two people thrown together, and they're going to wrestle. And they were wrestling against 3-minute warning, the Samoans. And Trent had his Backstreet Boys gimmick, and of course, there's a big hole in the crotch. And I'm sure everybody remembers him wrestling with a big hole in the crotch. And for WWE, it's like, I'm like, dude, you can't wear that. Like, you got to, like, you can't wear it with a hole in the crotch. Like, otherwise, it looked kind of all right, but, you know, it had a hole in the crotch. I'm like, you can't. So I give them these tights to wear, and they're like 1980s jobber-looking tights where they're, like, black and red with the frills, you know, the frills all hanging off of them. You know, like, I had my old black ones. They're black and blue ones. They're black, blue, and then had my symbol in the back, and then it had ND on there on the front, and they had
they were
also cut like that. But these were black and red, you know, basic, you know, with no other symbols on or anything. And so he puts them on, and he looked like the biggest jobber that you would ever see. And I thought that it was just us in the locker room. Because there's actually two parts of the locker room, and I didn't know there was two parts, and there's other wrestlers in the other side, and he puts them on, and I couldn't stop laughing. He's like, I look like an asshole. I'm just pointing at him, calling him a jobber, and I turn around, and Shane Helms is there looking at him, and that's when we first met Shane, when I first became, like, I guess my first beginning of having a relationship with Shane, a friendship with him, and he runs in, and he's like half dressed, you know, and looking at me, he's cracking up, and then some of the other boys came out, you know, that were, you know, wrestlers from WWE. They're all looking at me. He's like, I can't go out looking like this. I look like such a jobber. So I was like, all right. I had, you know, of course, I'm Mr., you know, Boy Scout. I come prepared for anything. So I have a sewing kit in my wrestling bag, and I'm like, I'll sew the hole together. So he gives me his pants, and I sew the hole, and it's getting close to showtime where he has to go. Like, it's like he has to be out there within, like, you know, 20 minutes. So I start sewing it, and I'm just getting it done, and they're calling. They're saying, dude, you gotta call him now. And so I'm finally done, and I go to give them to him, and I sewed the fucking pants to my shorts.
Oh, shit, dude.
So I'm like, oh, shit. So, I mean, I didn't, you couldn't see it on the other side. You know, like, it never showed, but, like, I just cut my shorts. You know, I said, fuck it, you know, these shorts are ruined now. So I cut my shorts and gave them to them, and they wore them. And they had their 2-minute and 50-second match with Trent and his just-fixed pants.
so he didn't.
Who did he wrestle?
That much of a jump. 3 minute warning. The Samoans.
Okay. Yeah.
It was
Jamal and Rosie.
Umaga was one of them, and then.
Yeah, Jamal and Rosie. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was him and Bison, and they just looked like such, like, they didn't look like any team or nothing, you know. It would have been so much better looking if it was Trent and Johnny, but it was cool. Like, he got music. I never got music. I got music one time in my whole entire WWE jobber run, and he got music his first time. And, you know, so, yeah, but it was cool for him. He got to, you know, go down and
now,
run, you know. So.
Now, I'm going to jump into the couple other things. I go right off of that because I think it's really interesting, and, you know, and it's cool, man. I don't have any problem with it. I mean, a lot of people will say, because, you know, well, you're more or less seamstress for the wrestlers. And, of course, there's no way that you haven't heard a comment similar to this. I haven't used sound drops yet, but...
What are you, a fan?
There's no way you haven't heard that type of thing. how did this come across, man? How did you get into that?
Well, number one, I tell people, when people ask me what I do, and I say I'm a seamstress, the proper thing is for a guy to say they're a tailor. I say I'm a seamstress for comedy reasons, and
for that type of reaction.
So I throw myself into the fire, you know.
Yeah.
So I set myself up for the jokes, and when I was doing jobs for WWE, I would watch them because they had seamstresses there, and they're making the gear right there. And I was really interested in watching.
You were sewing shit to your tights, and you're just like, all right,
I was watching, and I'm like, you know what? I want to learn how to do this, and I started checking out the prices of like fabric, and I started seeing like how I would actually enjoy doing it, and I don't have any other trade or nothing. I wrestled for 15 years. What else am I going to do? You know, so I have to think of something else to be able to do. And I know a lot of people in wrestling that, you know, they all need tights. I see how much money you can make on it, and now you don't become a millionaire, but you get to pay your bills with it, and
for sure.
It averages out to be pretty good. So after watching them, and I went and took like maybe three classes, and they taught me the basics, and then I just looked at all the tights that I had, and did it the right way that I see the people WWE did it, and then. That's how I got into doing it, and then I made a bunch of different stuff with like mistakes and.
Who were some of the people you made gear for, successfully?
I make all of Sabian's or Black Jesus. I make all his stuff. A bunch of the Sammy Callahan stuff. I made stuff for like Mike Bennett. Trying to think, of just like like everybody. I'm actually in the middle of making something for CW Anderson. Just anybody who orders, like Annie Social, I make her stuff. I'm just trying to think. None of my stuff ever really showed up in WWE though.
I
hear. Yeah, but I made some I don't know. But I guess a lot of the indie guys, I made a lot of their stuff. You know.
That's good, man.
So I'm still, I guess, because I'm in and out of it, because I get busy, then I don't get, I'm not busy, so it's I make it for a lot of people, and I don't make it for a lot of people, so I guess I should put, if I put more effort into advertising myself, I probably would make a lot more, but I don't put that much effort into advertising, so.
Yeah, that's cool, man, do your thing, but I got a bunch more stuff to ask you, but. One thing that, was a big thing that, you currently made things, a current match you did was...
Versus Donaldson.
how did that whole shit come across, man? Everybody in the fucking... Anybody who knows indies popped their ass off for that fucking show, man. What happened?
All right, well, I'm Judge Judy, and I got my ass kicked.
Something happened before. We're going to get into that. Judy come into it?
Tell the whole entire story. Number one, the whole entire thing is fucking legit as can be. Nothing of that was a work. A lot of people ask, how much is that a work? The only thing that was to work was that girl actually lied about shit on her end. That, you know,
like I wasn't trying to fuck her. That's like the only thing you're gonna say is a lie. It's like,
yeah,
I was not trying to fuck her, and everything else is the truth. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Dude, like,
you are not gonna pitch me that bullshit.
Not
today.
Yeah. So, all right. So this is the deal. All right.
Giving out there for some.
On plentyoffish.com to try and, you know, to meet girls, you know, to go on dates with them, you know, it's an internet dating website, and, you know, I was on it, you know, and checking out chicks, and, she was one of the people that they said I was a match with, and I looked, and then it said that she said that she lives in Hollywood, but she's visiting her family in South Philadelphia for the holidays, and she worked for a talent agency, and she got people jobs in movies and TV shows and commercials and whatever. So I was like, this is good. I don't care what she looks like. I'm going to become her friend, and we're going to hang out, and I'm going to get on her good side, and she's going to get me into TV shows, movies, commercials, whatever. So that's why I hit her up, okay? I didn't care what she looked like. I hit her up for that. And when I looked at the pictures, I wasn't attracted to her at all. However, she wasn't that bad looking in her pictures. But when I went to pick her up, she looked a lot shorter, a lot fatter, and a lot more disgusting of a face that you just want to punch and kick and bloody up and just leave in a dirty alley so that a homeless man can rape. That's how she
looks. Oh,
shit. But me being a gentleman and knowing how excited she was to go and see, go to this nightclub down in Atlantic City, I figured there's no way I can hang out with somebody and at a nightclub where there's alcohol and a bunch of other people. There's no way I can hang out with somebody and really have that bad of a time. I'm a grown man. I can handle myself if I get into any physical altercations. I didn't feel my life threatened. So the worst that would happen is I go down to Atlantic City and, you know, just, you know, like the worst that happens is I go down Atlantic City, you know? Like that's the worst that was going to happen. That's what I thought.
All right.
So, I picked her up. As soon as I saw her, she looked like a fat little munchkin, and I was like, oh, man, Jesus. So we're going down there, and we drive down, and we go to eat, and I'm like, because I was hungry, I was like, let's grab something to eat, and like, you know, like, I didn't know, like, you know, all the casinos are there. I didn't know if there was McDonald's or some shit around. I would have opted for McDonald's, but, like, as soon as we pull up, it's Caesar's right there in front of you, Caesar's getting to Atlantic City, off the expressway. Caesar's house, right in front of you, so... All right, let's go to Caesar's. So we go to Caesar's and grab something to eat at one of their places. And, of course, it's, you know, like, dude, I'm not saying that, like, I'm a cheapskate and $100 is a lot of money. But for a bitch that I don't give a fuck about, you know what I mean? Dropping $100 is fucking nice, dude. You know what I mean? Like, it was rare. Like, I dated my ex-girlfriend for, you know, 4 or 5 years. We were running, you know, if I didn't fuck it up, we were going to get married. So... Like,
yeah.
I think I paid $100 for dinner like twice for us. You know what I mean? Dinner doesn't have to be that extravagant. There's no fucking steak that's that good that is worth $100. You know what I mean? Or $50.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's not, unless you're getting a Ribera jacket with it. You know, that's the only
right
thing. You know, so anyway, I dropped $100. You know, for dinner, and then we go, and then, you know. Like, while hanging out with her, she was just really a catty person that was just so annoying. And I'm just like, I just wasn't having a good time talking to her. But you know what? I was just fucking being a nice guy and just going through and taking one for the team so I can try and get movies, you know, basically. So I smoke cigarettes. And so I had asked her before if she smoked cigarettes. She said, no, I'm allergic to smoke. So I didn't smoke the whole entire way down. I didn't smoke after the meal. We went to the club, and the club was in the Borgata, and as soon as we get in, it's like We got there like at 9, so we got to Caesar at 9, so I guess we got to the club like 10:30, and it was still kind of empty, you know. So, we're there, and she just wants to go jump on the dance floor right away. I'm like, let me get a drink, you know, let me relax.
Let me get drunk before I rub on you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I get a beer, and she gets her a drink, and then still she's trying to pull me off the dance floor. Okay, and then so I'm like, fuck, all right, I'll go. So she goes, and she's dancing her fucking heart out, you know, and she goes, this is my spot. This is where I used to hang out at when I used to come down here when I lived down here. Because apparently she lived down there or something.
Right.
You know, so she's like, this is where I used to come here every Monday and we used to party. Right here, this is my spot. I'm like, great. I'm looking around. And she's like, what are you doing?
Do you ever talk like that while sewing?
No, I never talk like that while sewing.
No.
Never, no. Only when I'm making fun of fat girls from fucking South Philly. That's the only time
I hate you. I'm just a busted boss.
Yeah, I know. You don't have to explain yourself. You can bust my balls. It's all good. You're not going to offend me. So, so I'm looking around, and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm looking for a place, you know, where I got to go to have a cigarette. And she just stops with her fat girl dancing, you know, motion self, and goes, if you go and have a cigarette, I'm going to be highly offended. Like, but that's not an attitude. I'm like, really? I'm like, all right. You know what? To avoid confrontation, okay. Fine, I'll hold it in. I'll be mad, but I'll hold it in. And, you know, at that point, I had like maybe like 4 or 5 sips of the beer, and I just downed it right away. And I'm not, you know, that big of a beer drinker, so, you know, for me to down a beer that quickly, it's, well, okay. So I down the beer, and I go get another beer. I'm like, I got to go get another beer. So I go get another beer, and she goes, she still has her drink because, you know, we just got a beer like maybe 2 minutes before then. And so, you know, she's sipping on her drink, and I'm drinking on my beer and standing there, and she goes, so tell me, where did you go to college? I said, I went to Bloomsburg University for like a year. I finished my freshman year, but college wasn't for me. I was making better money other way. You know, I was fine. I would rather have wrestled. You know, it was fine. And she just stops. She goes, I can never respect anybody who didn't finish college and get a degree. When I get married, if my husband thinks for a second that, you know, he's going to tell my kids that it's okay to not have a college education, then he's got another thing coming. And you need college, and my husband's going to have that college education. I'm like thinking, that's great. Now I don't have to deal with you. Thank God. It's my way out, you know? And then so I defend myself a little bit, but not get angry about it. And she's still being a snot whore about it. You know, and saying, being really fucking putting the boots to me and putting me down about it. I'm just saying, you know what, like, some people just aren't made for college, you know? So it's experience. I was like, dude, I've been in the wrestling business since I was 15 years old. I've experienced that college life while, you know, way before college even came to me. I was above and beyond that. You don't understand the partying and experiences we get in the wrestling business. I've had it already. I didn't need it. So, you know, she's still putting the business. She could never see it from my end. And then I was like, all right. And then so after that, she's done her drink. So she goes and she says, I want another drink. I was like, all right. So I go over to the bar and she's standing there and looking at me. I pull out my phone and I start texting. And she's waiting a couple of minutes. She says, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm texting. She's like, well, she pulls out her phone and she looks. She points to it and says, it's 11:30 at night. Nobody cares about what you're doing at 11:30 at night. Really? Well, my
shit.
Care about me at all times of day and night. I was like, I'm going over here.
I'm ma'am. That's crazy shit, dude. She's definitely pulling the shit on you.
So listen, there's still more. There's still more to this. And so
sure.
I say I'm going over here, and I walk over to like the side, and she's like, where are you going? You can't leave me here. I said, I'm walking right over here. I can't deal with you right now. I have to get away from you. And she's like, well, I need a drink. I said, go get your drink. I'll make sure nobody bothers you while you're there. I'll look at you, make sure you're okay. Go get your drink. She's like, well, you have to buy it for me. I was like, nah. This date's over, you know, fend for yourself, get your own drink, I'll get my own drink, hang out, and then that'll be it. And she's like, well, I don't have any money. So what do you mean you don't have any money? So I didn't bring any money with me. I said, why? How would you go somewhere and not bring any money or anything? It's like, well, I don't have a job. I don't have a way to buy my parents Christmas presents. He starts crying. I'm like, you don't have a job. You have a college education. So I don't have a college education. I don't have a degree. And I made a job available for me, so I have money. And she's crying. And I don't have money to buy my parents Christmas presents and whatever. And she's like, if I go to the ladies' room and cry, are you going to leave me? And she kept on, like, pressing the issue of me leaving her. I was like, no, I'm not going to leave you. Go cry. And it clicks to me, this girl's been left before because she's such an idiot. Like, because she must deal with other people this way. She had to have been left before. She knows the signs. And so she goes, and she's in there. And, like, a couple minutes later, I text her, and I say, listen, I'm going out to have a cigarette. And then she writes back, you know, You're an asshole. You care more about that cigarette than you do about me crying. I'm like, you're in the bathroom. What am I going to do? Like, I can't come in there for you. I don't even care about you. I don't care if you were in the bathroom or anywhere crying. I don't give a fuck about you. Like, dude, you weren't even a thought for me to fuck, you know? And like, you want me to care about you that you're crying? I don't give a shit. And so, like, dude, like, at this point, We're texting back and forth for like a good like hour, right? And I had already had my cigarette and been down there, and she was bitching to me. The reason why she didn't want me to go and leave is because if I left it and went to come back in, it would take me too long to come in, and she would have to be there by herself. And like I had gone out, had my cigarette, and come back in, texted with her, watched her while she texted with me, and then I went out and had another cigarette and went through that motion like a bunch of times. Like I went out, had a cigarette, come back in and watch her, and I never had a problem coming back in and out. And at one point, I'm standing next to her. She's typing to me, drinking on a new drink, and types it, looks at me, slams her phone shut, and walks away. And I get the text, and whatever it said, I'm like, I was standing right there next to you. We made eye contact a couple times, and she's like, telling me I'm a liar. I'm like, you were standing over here, you were drinking a drink, blah, blah, blah. She goes, yeah, I was drinking some guy's drink that he left in the bar. That, I was like, what? That is the most disgusting thing I've ever heard. You pick up somebody's drink that they left at the bar and you're drinking it? And so, like, that just started, like, you know, like, that was as much rude as I was. Like, I drove her about that. And then, she said something, like so many times she was being rude. And I said to her, like, you know, just stay and do your thing. I'll stay and do my thing, and then we'll leave, you know, and go home. She said, well, I'm not leaving until 4 o'clock. And even now, I was like, dude, that's like 4 o'clock. That's way, like, I don't feel like waiting here until fucking 4 o'clock, you know? Like, we'll leave earlier. And she said, I'm not leaving before 4. I was like, all right. And I even say okay to that. And as long as I make sure that she gets home, I did so much to make sure she got home. And like during that time, like while texting with her, I texted like so many of my different friends. And asked them what the fuck I should do. I even texted my mom so that I wouldn't disappoint my mom on what decision I made to leave her. Like, you know what to do. My mom even said, like, my mom said, you know, make up an excuse to leave. And I said, she won't. You know, she said, my mom, who's like a saint. My mom.
Hold on, Nick, for one second. You were texting your mom. How many times did you text your mom through those Trent escapades where he was playing DJ in the front seat? Like, was there like, hey, Trent's playing some fast shit right now. I got to let you go. Like, come on, man.
Yeah. Dude, like, listen, if I could have texted, my mom was not such a saint. I would have loved to have texted my mom and say, hey, mom, I'm getting laid right now. And, you know, Trent's up front playing DJ. And
he's playing DJ. It's insane. You gotta get out.
Dude, I would have loved to, but like I can't tell my mom I had sex. My mom's like the type of lady. She knows that I did, but it's she doesn't want to admit to herself. Because
we heard,
you know,
crazy past stories, and then this wasn't going right. So I was on the phone with my mom, and it's like, wait a minute, not quite the mama's boy.
So, dude, like, no, but really, like, I even asked the advice to my mom to, so I knew I was doing the right thing, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, I wanted to leave her, and, like, I told my mom, I was like what the fuck should I do? And, you know, she's like, well, first she says, make up an excuse, you know, blame it on me, whatever. She gave me all these things. I was like, Mom, it's not, like, it's working. She said, leave her there. Just leave her. Just come home. Leave her there. She'll find her own way home. And once my mom said that, I was like, okay, as long as my mom's okay with it. If my mom thinks that, my mom's not going to be disappointed with me making this decision, I know I'm making the right decision. You know what I mean? I don't care if I'm 32 years old. If my mom gives me the graces, if my mom's a good enough person, that if she gives me that advice, I know that's the right decision. So,
yeah.
So I write out the message saying I'm leaving, right? But I didn't send it yet because the girl left her jacket in my car. I go to grab the jacket, go to the kid, take it to cook check, and it's a good, like, you know, 10-minute ordeal to go back to my car, take it to cook check and all, and she keeps on texting, right? Like, at least, like, you know, 10 times, you know? And so more than one of the texts, I accidentally sent the text saying, I'm leaving you and find your code of cook check. And so, like, you know, like, I still have, like, you know, a 5-minute journey to get back to my car, and I already sent it to her, and the club was closer to my car.
Right.
So if she was to leave the car, she would have been there within, like, you know, a minute, and for me, it would have, you know, taken me, you know, 5 minutes to get there. So, you know, I go to leave, and I see her kicking the back of my car, and, you know, I just see one kick from her. And then turns around and she comes and walks up the steps, and there's, like, steps and then a level, then another steps and all that. And I meet her at, like, one of the steps, and she's like, take me home. I'm like, no, you're not getting my car. I'm not letting you in my car. You know, like, nobody talks to me that way. You find your own way home. I told you to find your own way home. And she goes,
right,
punch me. I block the punch, and she knees me in the balls. And the security was right there. And I just don't like dealing with cops, security, nothing. So I looked at security. I was like, take care of her. She's harassing me. And I left. And so
did you no-sell the, like human tornado? Just, like, no-sell the shit out of her?
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. Dude, she hit me in the balls. It didn't even, like, hurt. Like, not to say I don't have balls, but, dude, like, it didn't hurt, you know? I know how to block that. I know how to take that shit. I've been hitting the ball so many times, you know, I could take that shit. dude, I fucking, you know, get my car, go home, you know, and whatever. And then, like, I get home and I notice there is dents all over my car. Like, every single panel of my car, there's dents. Now, my car, it is an older car. I bought it in the year 2000, but I bought it brand new. And from the year 2000 until, you know, the day that happened, in, you know, the end of 2011, it didn't have dents all over. It didn't have dents. It had scratched up on the bumpers, you know, and that's about it. And
right.
So in one night, this girl put all these dents in my car. And so I tell her that she's going to either take care of the dents on my car, or I'm going to go down to Atlantic City and file her a lawsuit on her, or get her arrested for hitting me for assault.
Right.
Because she did. And she's like, you can't prove it. I said, it's a casino. There's cameras all over the place. And then, so she was continuing to deny. And so, I drove down to Atlantic City. I went to the casino. I filled out a complaint. They did the investigation to get the video footage. And
right.
I told her that. I said, I'm at the Borgata right now. And she calls up and she finds out, like, they tell her that I am there putting a